Cody is really cranking it tonight. A little Metallica getting us started. Is it because I'm dressed like an extra from a House of Pain video? Is that why you wanted to go? You wanted to go some hardcore?
Has something to do with it.
So I'm wearing this. It's a hybrid. It's a hockey jersey hoodie hybrid that I was gifted at Christmas from my lovely wife and daughter.
It does partially work on electricity.
It's I could throw the hood up. Yo, could do that. Could leave the hood down. I don't know what's going on with it, but. This was the funniest part of the exchange. I opened it up and I thought, oh, all right, it's a Guinness hockey jersey. Then I pull it out and it's, like I said, a hockey jersey, but it's got a hood on it. So it's a hoodie made of hockey jersey material. And I said, oh, this is very nice. Thank you. In my usual gracious gift receiving way. I probably went, oh, nice. But I thanked them. My wife said, don't you remember? We saw this at Irish Fest. One of the tents, and it was on sale. I do remember that it was like half off when we saw it. But I remembered that later. She was like, don't you remember you saw it and you liked it and it was the right size and it was on sale and I've had it for all these months and I'm looking at it going, kinda, I remember. Cause at Irish Fest, quite frankly, I had had a number of Guinnesses. So I don't know what we looked at a ton of things in the different tents, but I like it. It's not something that a man in his 50s would usually wear. Would you concur with that?
I don't know what men in their 50s usually wear.
Well, not this, I'm guessing. But it's fun. I like it, and I will wear it again. This isn't one and done, because today I'm leaving, and Debbie said, oh, I'm glad to see you're wearing it. And I said, well, I'm on the radio.
But you you transcend age.
I do. I'm ageless. Would that be correct?
Yeah.
Would you like to say
that
I'm ageless?
You don't look 50.
No, thank
no, goodness. Seriously.
No, I look 60.
No, you don't.
I look 78. I look 112. Wow. I do not. I'm not aging well.
No, you don't look 15.
Well, thanks, Roger. No.
And it looks very good on you. You wear it well.
I do wear it well.
Yes.
You know why? You know what
You're
it is,
a
Roger?
Well-dressed man.
Confidence. Yeah. You pull off anything with confidence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, no matter what you want to wear. I'm looking in a couple weeks. I've got some Mardi Gras pattern pants.
Ooh.
I'm and a kilt that I'm going to wear in New Orleans. You know why? Because I have confidence.
There you go.
That's what you want to do. Yeah. When I wore the seersucker suit, much to Molly's chagrin, confidence. Got a lot of looks from the ladies.
Yeah.
Oh, come on now. Stop it. I was wearing something else. I'm finally starting. I'm pointing out to my, you know, my wife is lovely. She's a patient woman. Patience knows no end because she's been married to me for over 25 years. But occasionally I'll wear things and I'll get compliments from people. And then I always give her like, see, you're lucky you have me. And she goes, no, I could just buy the clothes and put them, you know, hang them somewhere and look at them. I don't need what fills them. It's what
you
fills the clothes.
Say
it's a pay
that to her.
What?
You're
oh, aren't you looking at me? Sure, of course I do. Because I, you know, again, confidence misplaced, but still confident. I want to take a minute and just address a loss that we at WGN and I think society as a whole. And I don't say that aggrandizingly. Milt Rosenberg died the other day, and he was 92 years old. Now, a lot of people here at the station knew Milt a lot better than I did. I knew Milt. Roger wrote a very nice, eulogy kind of thing, right? About your meeting Milt.
Memory.
Yeah,
of,
memory.
Of my time, because I started on that Friday night.
Yeah.
And right in the middle of his show, it was like Judy kind of went up to the middle. He was on for 2 hours, so she did the first hour, and then I came in that Friday night for the second hour, and I was doing that for quite a number of years, and then Nick was on, then you were on, you know.
Yeah, it's Extension 720 was a show that a lot of times, I'll be honest, the show would be promoted, and I'm like, I don't know anything about that subject. But then, and which is, I would imagine the case with a number of people. Milt covered everything. He covered everything from theater and TV. Simple, what you would think of more accessible topics.
Mm-hmm.
His word topics were always really good. His language topics, all that kind of stuff. To the most, to political stuff, to everything. Philosophical.
Historical stuff.
Yeah, everything.
Yeah.
Everything. And you'd go, man, I don't know if this is going to be my cup of tea. But if you were patient and gave it some time, even subjects you didn't think you had any interest in, that first hour of the program when Milt would talk to his guest before he would open up the phones was always fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was a show unlike any that had been on before, and I don't think another one will come along. I, you know, and that's no disrespect to anybody who's doing shows right now. You know, no matter how intelligent you think you are,
mm-hmm.
Milt knew a lot about everything. His friend who wrote the official announcement called him, I think it was a polymath, which means you know a lot about everything. And it's culminated from experiences that you've lived in your life. And yes. Milt was full of those experiences.
It's not that he knew a lot about everything. He knew more than anybody else about
right.
everyone. Because I know a lot about a lot of stuff.
I know a little about a lot.
But it's enough to get me in trouble.
Right. Milt knew a lot about
right.
a lot. And
yes.
he was also curious.
Oh.
And he was also not afraid to ask hard questions.
Mm-hmm.
So I met Milt. Whenever you start here, when Milt was working here, there were certain people who, when I started, intimidated me. You know, who
mm-hmm.
were legend. Orion,
mm-hmm.
Orion,
yep.
and I've talked about this on the air, and I've talked about it to Orion, so I'm not speaking out of... Orion intimidated me to no
mm-hmm.
end, because I grew up listening to him. He's a legend.
Sure.
Milt was another guy
mm-hmm.
who, at first blush, was very... He didn't seem approachable. He seemed like a guy who, you know, he had his own way of doing things, because he was not... For as much as he contributed, he wasn't one of those buddy-buddy guys. He wasn't
no.
the guy hanging out in the break room, you know?
Right.
You weren't gonna just, he gave the appearance that he wasn't gonna suffer fools, which I don't think he did.
Right.
And if he was going to talk to you, he wanted to have a discussion. It didn't have to be about earth-shattering issues, but he also did things his way. And so, at first, I was intimidated by Milt. And then I started doing Sports Night. Well, before I did Sports Night, I was covering a period of time from 7 to 10 by myself, where
mm-hmm.
they weren't sure. I didn't realize there was a plan in place. I was not privy to said plan, but I was doing this show by myself. And then they made an announcement that the new show was going to start. And originally, I was just going to be part of it on a rotating basis.
Mm-hmm.
That changed, but originally. And... I was sitting back in the old studio. I didn't have anywhere to work, so I always worked in the conference room. And I was sitting at the conference room table prepping the overnight show,
mm-hmm.
the late Friday show. And Milt came in, and he sat down and he talked to me. And I won't, I'm not going to share everything that he said. That was between Milt and I. But I will say, first of all, the man didn't have to sit down and talk to me.
Right.
We had a passing, hi, Milt, how are you? Hello, nice to see you. That was it. That was
mm-hmm.
our relationship. And he sat down at the table with me, and he talked to me for a few minutes and said some things that meant a lot to me and have stayed with me. And so the other day, I was, you know, while we weren't close, it affected me greatly when I read that he had died. I didn't like when he was kind of pushed out of here.
Mm-hmm.
And if people don't like those words, well, you know where to find me. But he was, you know.
Right.
Milt was not the easiest guy. He wasn't the easiest guy to work with. He wasn't the easiest guy to deal with. He wasn't a saint by any means. He was a very smart man. He was a great broadcaster. And he deserved to be on that first class of WGN, on WGN's Walk of Fame. He deserved those accolades. And he will be missed. My brother was a guest on his program a number of times as the only Democrat in a room full of Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you go on as a guest, you better be loaded for bear when you're
yeah.
sitting across from Milt, because he's not playing games. And then to be invited back, that was, you know, I know for my brother, it was a big deal
mm-hmm.
to be not only asked the first time, but then to be invited back, because that meant Milt respected you. And I got that feeling from him about me, and I appreciated it. I appreciate it to this day. So, yeah, Milt will be missed,
yeah.
and it was a great loss. Did you work at all with Milt Cohen?
I produced a few of his shows, yeah.
How was that? Because now, you only produced a few. Did you have to take the test?
I did not have to take the test.
Because that is a real thing. I thought it was just, I thought it was kind of urban legend, but more and more producers who worked with him have said, yeah, he would ask you a number of tough questions historical and otherwise, and you had to answer them.
I believe I was given some semblance of a preliminary test by his producer at the time. I think it was Zach Christensen. Is that right?
Yes, yeah. Zach was his longtime producer.
Zach there for a really long time. I'm pretty sure I had to jump through a couple hoops before he was like, okay, you are on an intellectual level that's able to just handle the phone calls.
Right.
Because he would still book it. I mean, it wasn't a tough job for me as a producer.
Right.
Because an engineer would kind of run his board and everything. It was just mostly making sure the guests are there at the right time, taking the calls.
Yeah.
But I do think that there was a little bit of an intellectual standard because the callers, and you had to listen.
Right.
Like, there are shows that I filled in for where, I can kind of multitask, do lots of different things.
Sure.
But his show was not like that. I mean, his show was like, the first couple times I'd space out or not listen for a minute, or I'd be checking his Facebook page or WGN Radio or something, and the caller would ask something, and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about. And it was some really in-depth, complex concept that they had just spent, 20 minutes discussing. So
right.
It was a show you kind of had to pay attention to, but
yes.
Weirdly, when I moved to the city initially 10 years ago, I didn't listen to a ton of Chicago radio because I was moved from Des Moines, but whenever I flipped through the dials and I landed on Milt Show, I always stuck on there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was like, to me, even just as a guy fresh out of college, just kind of like fresh to the whole Chicago radio landscape, every time that landed me, single time, it was just always something really interesting.
And even the callers, as you mentioned, even the callers to that show felt like they had to step it up. You know,
yeah.
It's like everybody's game got raised a little bit listening to Milt.
He reminded me of like Larry King if he had a PhD.
Yeah.
Just, yeah. A very, like, very, very kind of, he really was very down to earth, but his questions were really, really smart questions.
And he could talk about anything with anybody.
Yeah.
Which was, so, rest in peace, Milt. I know everybody here, there was a big special the other night that Justin hosted, a lot of old interviews and things like that, and everybody, Milt had the all the best authors because they had to come on his show first, or they would not... it would not bode well. So,
one of the things I didn't put in my recollection that, because there was so much, but his office, which was right off of the conference room
right.
We talked about,
yeah.
The door was always closed,
mm-hmm.
And you never knew when he was there. Even when he didn't have a show, you never knew if he was in
right.
the room or not. And
sometimes
often,
you would hear the classical music coming out of
it. Exactly. But often I'd be over there because the free table, this is back on the first floor.
Right. So well, that was his office was when I had an office at one time, Cody. Mm. I had an office.
I was there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
When
you
got that office.
Right. Next to Milt's.
That's where we stole the whiteboard from.
That's true.
Well, we didn't steal it.
We just moved it upstairs.
It fell off, didn't it?
Permanently.
Yeah. Well, no, it's still in the building. We instead of leaving it to the demolition on the first floor, we brought it up to the seventh floor.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't a great heist. There was no caper involved in this. It was just like, hey, should we bring this upstairs? Yeah, let's bring it upstairs. Well, so we popped it off the wall and brought it upstairs.
There you go. What I was getting to was that once in a while the door would be open, and my mouth would drop every time I would be walking past and look in, because he had stacks upon stacks from floor to ceiling of books. I like reading, but I don't think even my wife, who can go through two books a day, I don't think even my wife would be as voracious a reader as he was.
I don't know how, just from a logistical standpoint, I don't know how they got all those books out of here.
Well, a lot of them, when he was done with them, they put them on the free table so people would take them and read them. But then I think the others, they just kind of eventually just tossed them, I guess.
Free table.
Do you remember that?
I do. No, it's just the top of a file cabinet. All right, we have to, if you have any memories, feel free, jump in. We've got a few minutes before the news, 312-981-7200. We'll talk about this and so much more. And then after 6:30, we got to talk about Hawaii. Unbelievable. So we'll do all that after this WGN. Tomorrow is, of course, Martin Luther King Day. A lot of people off work, off school. All the kids are off of school. My wife actually has a day off tomorrow, which is unbelievable. But instead of just looking at it as a day off, a long weekend, it's supposed to be a day of service, right? That's what Martin Luther King Day is supposed to be. So there's some different ways. What will you be doing on Martin Luther King Day, Carl? You're working. You're a day job. You're actually working.
Working all day.
Working. Very nice. Roger will be doing what he always does. We don't have to worry about it because we'll be able to read about it on Facebook.
Of course.
There'll be a long diatribe. Rufus will be in there somehow.
A long diatribe?
Well, one or two. One to start the day. Is Monday laundry day or is that Tuesday?
Tuesday.
Tuesday's laundry day. Yeah. Why should I know? Why do I know that? Except because every Tuesday it starts our laundry day. You do it incredibly early. Speaking of laundry, quickly, we'll get to ways you can help on Martin Luther King Day. Teenagers, get your heads out of your collective butts and stop eating laundry detergent pods.
Oh, yes.
I know they look delicious. They look like candy treats. But the Tide Pod Challenge is the newest teen way to almost kill yourself. I know you're teenagers. I was a teenager. I know you're stupid because you're a teenager. That's okay. That's what the teenage years are about, being stupid, making rash decisions. However, if you're eating laundry detergent pods, you're another level of stupid, and you need some help. Before you pop one in your mouth, go talk to your parents. Call maybe an older sibling or a cousin. Go to your neighbor's house. Knock on the door. Hey, Mrs. Johnson, what do you need, Bobby? I was wondering, would you eat this? And when she looks at you with that look that says, man, my dog could do math better than you, then realize that this is not right. If you haven't heard about this, teenagers who have been doing all kinds of things, cinnamon challenges, they do the thing where they throw boiling water on each other, they put ice in their hands or salt on their hands, and then they hold ice till they burn themselves. I thought teenagers had more stuff to do. My daughter had a lot of things to do when she was a teenager. She wasn't engaged in any of these pranks, these potentially really harmful pranks that they're doing to each other voluntarily. It's not like these teenagers being held hostage somewhere and tortured for information about, you know, what Rihanna is doing. They're free. They're free to roam the earth, which is scary. Because if here's the thought. These people who are eating laundry detergent pellets, packets, are going to be running the country someday. Now, granted, you could argue, how much worse could it get? My answer to that would be, I don't know what long-term damage laundry detergent does to your brain, but I'm guessing significant would be the key adjective there.
Poisonous.
Yes, it's toxic. What? And Grant, now, all right, listen. I love laundry detergent. As you know, I'm always clean, inside and out. My clothes laundered perfectly.
You're a very clean man.
If you're designing these, why do you make them look so delicious? Because they do. Have you seen them, Cody?
Very
they colorful. Look like beautiful saltwater taffies. Oh, my goodness. I want to pop one in my mouth during this rant about not eating them. I'm like, I'm seeing the picture. I can understand. I don't understand. When they first came out and they were saying, listen, infants will eat them. All right, if an infant eats them, it's not all right if an infant eats them. But I understand they're infants and they don't know any better. If you get to be 13 years old and you don't know that you shouldn't eat laundry detergent on a dare, go put a cold towel on your head. Lay down.
About 3 or 4 years ago, I remember when these first came out, these pods.
Yes.
That there was huge warnings because people were finding little kids, babies, grabbing a hold of these.
Right.
And the warning went out across the nation. Huge warnings
across
from everybody and their brother.
And they made different cap because it used to just be an easy screw off top.
Yeah.
So then they made it harder to get the tops off because toddlers and infants were eating these.
Mm-hmm. You think people would have learned?
No, people learned. You know who didn't learn?
Hmm.
Teenagers.
Well,
teenagers didn't learn because it's a teenager's job to be an imbecile. On every I'm not saying I was above it. I'm a long way from being a teenager, but trust me, I was an imbecile.
Yes.
I raised a woman who was at once a teenager, and at times, she was an imbecile. I have 4 brothers who were all teenagers. Imbecile, 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 imbecile. All of us. So I get it. But when are we, at what point do we just cut bait and go, all right, listen, you want to eat detergent pods? Yeah, you go right ahead. Because obviously me telling you not to is not going to do any good. I told you not to put salt on your hands and then hold ice and burn yourself, and you did that too. I told you not to try to, you know, take a mouthful of cinnamon because you were going to choke to death. You did that too. When do we write off all the teenagers and go, listen, call me when you're 20. I'm not going to talk to you. Once on the last day that you're 12, I say goodbye to you. I kiss you goodbye. We send you to Teen Island. You go to Teen Island where all the stupid decisions can run wild. And then on the eve of your 20th birthday, I show up outside and I wait outside the gate. And just like a prison discharge, mm-hmm. when you're 20, they shoot you out back into the real world. Doesn't guarantee you're smarter. You may not have survived. But
true.
I'm going to gamble. Because I can't, as a parent, go through watching my child, who I thought was, even if you think your kid's only kind of intelligent,
mm-hmm.
they read at grade level. They can do simple math. Right. They held down a part-time job at CVS. And okay, your kid might not be a genius. Oh, there's my alarm going off. I got to take my medicine. I got to take my antipsychotic medication. But the point is, parents shouldn't have to live thinking, man, I raised this kid till he was 13, mm-hmm. and now he's become a complete idiot. And he's going to eat laundry soap.
Here's what I think has happened.
Quickly, because we have to get to your news.
Right. We did a great job as parents.
Did we?
Wait a minute. Hear me out. We constantly told our children, here are the mistakes we made. Do not make them again. So you know what they did?
They came up with new mistakes.
With new mistakes.
But listen, I never had to tell my daughter, listen, when I was your age, I used to drink laundry soap. It never came up. Never. Never once. You know, granted, windshield washer fluid looks like blue Kool-Aid.
Right.
Never drank it.
No.
Never. And I'm not the brightest bulb in the marquee. All right, we got to do this. Listen, it's news time. It's 6:30. It's WGN. You know all the crucial facts. Did you also know that it's news time and here's Roger Badish? Yesterday morning was crazy. I first started hearing about these... I saw on social media, of course, the news about the missile warning that had been sent out all over Hawaii. And at first I thought, what's going on here? This has got to be a joke. And then, you know, the more you followed up and the more fake news outlets that you looked at, you realize, no, this was not, in fact, fake news. This was real. And it terrifying. This is, if you were sitting in Hawaii yesterday morning, a little after 8 o'clock, this is part of what you hear. Now, don't panic. This is a replay of yesterday's, all right?
Stay indoors. If you are outdoors, seek immediate shelter in a building. Remain indoors well away from windows.
Again, this is
if you are driving, pull safely to the side of the road and seek shelter in a building or lay on the floor. We will announce when the threat has ended. This is not a drill.
This is not a drill. The five scariest words I think you could ever hear when it comes to a missile launch. The text that went out, you've all seen this by now, the text that went out that was sent to everybody's phone, ballistic missile threat inbound to Hawaii, seek immediate shelter, this is not a drill. Turns out it was not a drill, but it was also not real, thank God. It was a human error. They said, oh, we just pushed the wrong button. They didn't say it quite as cavalierly as I just did, but that was basically it. So we could go through all the technical parts of it and the need for civil defense and the fact that since December, Hawaii has been checking their air raid horns again. They've had some trouble with them. We could debate the climate that has us in a position where we believe that this could actually be happening. And the residents of Hawaii who know that if a missile was launched from North Korea, they have about 20 minutes, I think it said 14 or 20 minutes to before impact. So we could talk about all that, but, and you can, but what I want to talk about is that 38 minutes, the 38 minutes before it was widely touted that this was a false alarm. Now, the senator from Hawaii, Senator Gabbard, had tweeted out about 15 minutes into this that, hey, there's no attack. This was a false alarm. Something had happened. But people were skeptical. Finally, after 38 minutes, the state puts out the big notification. This is not. Now, you've seen the news reports. I've been reading reports and watching the news all day about this and all day yesterday, watching people's reaction as they ran, trying to find cover, as if cover was going to help. You know, the officials in Hawaii have been telling everybody, you need to shelter in place. If this happens, just go inside and wait till it's over. Kind of ride it out. I want to know from you, because I've been thinking about this myself. If you were in this situation, let's say there was a mistake here. Now, we know we have more than 20 minutes before a strike would come. But let's say we're in Hawaii. Let's say this is, you know, Michigan is our North Korea, and they're going to shoot a missile at us. What do you do in that 38 minutes? Because I've read firsthand accounts of people, not tourists, but people who live in Hawaii, who were like, you know, they tell us we should have hurricane preparedness kits and things like that, and some of us do and some of us don't, and but will that have helped? I don't know. Then I read reports of people, you know, tourists who you couldn't get cell reception, but you could text, and they were texting people, telling them they loved them and telling them goodbye, and then they were, you know, crying and panicking, and some people were having a couple drinks at the hotel they were at, trying to just, because what are you going to do? You try to make peace, I guess. You make peace with yourself. You make peace with whatever higher power you believe in. And then you just accept it, because they said people were leaving their cars on the highway and running into the, trying to get to the hills. People were running into tunnels along the highway. Hotels were bringing all their guests down into the basement or telling them to, oh, she's a representative, Gabbard. She's not the senator. But the point is, I want to know what you would think you'd do. Because I was thinking about this, and I'm like, all right, if you're with your family, you can say the proper goodbyes. If you're not with your family, then you're just kind of out there. You're texting, you know. If you're not anywhere where you could get home. I read a report of a woman whose husband was on the, I think it was the Air Force base out there. And he was at the base, but this came out, he was able to come back home, you know, because he was close enough. What do you do? You know, I have no idea how I would react.
What's been the training over all these decades about if there is a nuclear attack?
Duck and cover. But what, come on, we all know that's hogwash.
Right.
We all
know there has been no training.
And civil defense has fallen off since the Cold War ended.
In fact, there is no civil defense agency. My dad was head of the civil defense in Evanston.
Yeah.
And we knew where the locations. Remember, I don't know if you're old enough to remember, but there used to be civil defense signs posted throughout the city at locations where you could go into a basement.
Right.
Or an area that was supposed to be safe from a nuclear attack. This was back in the 50s and early 60s. There's nothing like that anymore.
No, there isn't. And I you know, I remember, you know, this was back, civil defense helmets. And my grandfather was like a precinct or ward, whatever.
Sure, a block captain.
Yeah,
probably.
And he had the helmet and all that kind of stuff.
And he would walk around with
a
whistle.
But now we don't know. And even Hawaii, they said they haven't really amp things up to the point where they should. And it's horrible that they should.
Right.
And, you know, people are blaming the hostilities between our administration and North Korea on escalating this to the point where now we believe that this could be happening at a moment's notice. But, putting yourself in that position to think, all right, for 38 minutes, you think you're going to die. Now, after the first 20... If you're a resident of Hawaii, you probably knew this better. After the first 15 or 20, you're like, well, they told us that if there was a launch, it would have hit by now. You're probably starting to wonder what's going on. If you're a tourist, you don't know that. You know, if you're there, you've saved up your whole life. You go to Hawaii for a holiday. Maybe you're celebrating something. And all of a sudden, you hear this, and you're like, okay, I don't know. You don't give up. Have you ever had to live with that kind of terror for even that short a time? And 38 minutes is an eternity, but in the whole scheme of our lives, obviously, it's not. 312-981-7200. Eric's been holding on. He's in Tinley Park. Hi, Eric.
Hi, Brian. You're discussing the very question and point I was going to bring up. I'm kind of a child of the Cuban Missile Crisis era.
Okay.
And when I was growing up, I remember there were all sorts of public buildings that were of stout construction. It had a strong basement, and they all had public fallout shelter signs. They had three upside-down yellow triangles, and that was the symbol for a public fallout shelter. And I remember the air raid wardens, you know, with the the civil defense pith helmet and an armband, and, you know, they were civilian volunteers. And I guess my question is the threat from North Korea greater or less than the threat that Cuba was, that Cuba posed back in, you know, the late 50s and early 60s? Because I somewhere read that we were down to 2 minutes. It was like a two-minute grace period of attack from Cuba back in the 60s during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And I'm just wondering, all right, why don't we, if North Korea is posing a credible threat to our country, why don't we have public fallout shelters, and why aren't we reviving that theme, so to speak?
That's a good question, Eric, and I wonder if it's because to this point we didn't think that North Korea had the capability of reaching this country, and now that we suspect that they do, or we have confirmed that they do, maybe that kind of thing will amp up again. But before it was just bluster from North Korea. Whatever. We knew there were missiles in Cuba.
Right.
You know.
Right.
So I think that was the difference to this point.
Well, I think now we know that North Korea has a missile that's capable of hitting the continental United States.
Of course.
And as a piece of civil defense trivia, the federal government during the Cuban Missile Crisis provided all sorts of towns all over the country with the yellow air raid sirens, and they were manufactured by a company in Chicago, Federal Sign and Signal Company. And every town from Markham up to Evanston and Glenview were installing these sirens, and it had the yellow civil defense colors, and there was just a big push back then for the civil defense awareness.
Yeah, I have a feeling, Eric, that we're going to start seeing that again. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. Let's do this. We'll get to some more of your calls, more of your thoughts. At 38 minutes in Hawaii, what would you do if all of a sudden your cell phone started beeping and you saw that warning come across? How do you, what do you do for those last 38 minutes? And then, does it change the way you feel post-warning? Once you realize it's not really happening and, hey, I didn't die today. Does that change your outlook on anything? 312-981-7200. We'll talk more about it on the other side. It's WGN. For 38 minutes, the people of Hawaii thought they were under a missile attack. Turns out, thankfully, it was a false alarm. But how does that affect you? Different accounts of what people did. A lot of people ran. As I said, they got out of their cars and tried to run into tunnels on the highway. One big highway running through, I think it was the Big Island. You know, is that really going to help? But how, you don't think rationally. You know, well, if I run into the hills, I'll be okay. Well, you know, yes, the cities are what's being targeted, but, you know, in rational thought, in hindsight, you'll probably go, well, I probably wasn't going to do any, that wasn't going to do me much good, but what else are you going to do? You're just reacting out of pure fear. The civil defense sirens did not go off, from all reports, so that was a clue as time went on to some residents that something might be amiss before they started seeing the tweets that said this was not this was a false alarm. But what would you do? 312-981-7200. How do you handle that 38 minutes? What do you tell your kids as this is happening? One mother said she was trying to get her child into the bathroom. That's where they were going to shelter. She had brought in all kinds, and she didn't want to tell the kid what was going on. But finally she had to tell the child something that, listen, it's, you know, we're in here, it's kind of dangerous, and things might get bad. But is that, you know, imagine thinking that's where you could die, is in your bathroom. Horrifying. 312-981-7200. Art's in Midway. Hi, Art.
Yeah, Brian. Good evening. Well, I was commenting to your screener, you know, if you've been watching the news, I don't know if you might think this is a good comment or not, but I'll mention the fact that North Korea was kind of like sending a delegation for the Olympics.
Yes, yeah.
So it seems kind of dumb that they would be doing a moonshot towards Hawaii when they're sending a delegation to the Olympics.
Yeah, I mean, in hindsight, there's a lot of things that you can say, well, this doesn't make sense. It probably wasn't going to happen. But in the moment, if it's 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning and your cell phone is ringing or is buzzing from the official notification that there's an attack, you don't take time, I don't think, to, you know, dissect all the week's news.
Yeah, I definitely would have gone to a very safe place, and I wouldn't have just gone back swimming or, you know, get in a suntan. Yeah.
Yeah, you're going to panic a little bit. I don't I don't know. It's I can't imagine the horror that those people were going through for those 38 minutes.
Hopefully they'll get the defenses better. I tell people, you know, this is what money should be wasted on, not, you know, things like a border wall or something that's not so good.
No, I agree, Art. Yeah, there's certain things that investing money in makes sense, certain things that don't. I appreciate the call. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
Take care. After 9/11, I remember telling my kids in high school to get on a bus and get away from the city in case of any terrorism. My husband, as a Chicago police officer at that time, had drills in case of terror attacks. Yeah, I assume that our law enforcement officers and our officials are all training in this, but we have to also let the citizenry know what to do, and not just go, hey, well, stay in your house, don't run to the stay there. Why? So it's easier for you to identify us, so that you can come and go, oh, 1222 Elm Street. Well, that's where the Goffs live, and they just. Yep, there's six of them. Here we go. It's horrifying. And I'm not trying to make light, but, you know, can you imagine, Cody, getting that alert and knowing you had, thinking you had 20 minutes to say goodbye to everybody? Would you have called me? Would you have texted me? Somewhere down the line? Not like your first or second, but would I made the top five texts after your mom and dad. Your brothers and sister.
I would have just done a text all.
Casey. Oh, a group text?
Yeah.
Oh,
group text all.
All right, group text everybody.
A lot of people online are wondering, hypothesizing, what will the birth rate be 9 months from today?
Oh.
Because think about it. A lot of people,
listen,
a lot of people are going to want the last thing they did. Well, in the movies.
Well, sure. But I know my wife. And if we had 20 minutes left, no, that's not happening. I don't know. We'd like to think that everybody's going to do that. But I think you spend the first 5 minutes, like, trying not to just completely flip out.
I mean.
Then you cry. Somebody on our text line said that's enough time to drink two bottles of wine. That's probably true. I don't know if I want to go out. Do I want to go out hammered?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Go out like I came in.
Exactly. Back in the day.
All alcoholed up. Yeah, you got, even at 8 a.m, a couple of mimosas. No, you try. You got to gather the people around that are around you, and then this one woman's report said she got her dog and put him in his kennel, but she wasn't gonna. There wasn't room for the kennel or the dog in the bathroom. But she's like, I feel awful, but you know, there's only room in there for me and my kid. So those are the hard choices. It just I don't know. Mike's on the state line. Hi, Mike.
Hello.
What's going on?
Hey, is this Brian?
It is.
Yeah, this is Mike. I'm calling from Winter Harbor, Illinois, up near Illinois, Wisconsin state line. It's the first time I just turned you guys on and was listening to the conversation. Didn't even think I'd get through, to be honest.
Well, you are through.
Well, just to let you know, I grew up in the inner city in the 50s and the 60s when they had the Cold War going. And I think it was your caller about 5 minutes ago said that he was part of the Cold War growing up era. I remember when... there were Nike missiles out on Montrose Harbor that they had pointed out on the rails up there back then. But I also was in the Air Force and Vietnam veteran, and I also, after I did active duty, I did reserve, and they stuck me on the nuclear biological chemical warfare. And to be honest, if the stuff really did hit, there's nothing you can really do. So
kind
of like you don't take life for granted, and because it can go in a flash, and I believe with nuclear stuff.
Yeah, it's a horrifying thought, Mike. I appreciate the call. Thanks for trying, and thanks for listening today. Look at that. Mike found us, Cody, and he stayed with us. Let's see. Oh, we've got some conspiracy theories coming through on the text line. Always fun for those. A lot of people saying, hey, just put your head between your legs and kiss it goodbye, which, you know, that's all very cavalier and fun. Is that really? Is that what you're going to do? You're just going to go, oh, look, it says a missile's coming. I'm just going to sit here and wait. I mean, there's really not a whole lot you can do, but something, you know? Is group text too informal or too impersonal for something like this? But time is the tyrant. So do you have time to type out individual text to everybody? No, I think you're right. I'd go one group text for family, one group text for friends. And then I'd get on social media just with a final FU.
I feel like you'd get a lot of final Facebook posts.
People going on Instagram, going live with their story. Because I want to go viral when I'm vaporized by a nuclear missile. That's exactly what I want to happen. I don't know. I think social media would be the last thing I would think of.
Yeah. Same here, but I think a lot of other people would think of social. I mean, it is a way to reach the most people. Like, if I want
to. And social media is how people found out at first that it was a false alarm by going on Twitter.
Yeah. That I would definitely get on Twitter.
Twitter is the way to find news. But then I'd be afraid that, knowing Twitter, there'd be some valuable information. Then there'd be horrible people tweeting insults at the people who are passing on the information. Am I the only one who found it funny that one of the men in charge of the whole deal in Hawaii was Mr. Miyagi? Vern Miyagi?
You're not the only one.
Okay, good. Because I was like, Mr. Miyagi's going to lose his job. Mr. Miyagi's losing his job on Monday, if he didn't lose it already. Glenn's in Milwaukee. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Brian. There was a time back in the Cold War era that the grammar school kids were actually issued out dog tags to be able to say, when they were, incinerated to beyond belief.
No.
That you'd actually be able to identify you because you had this lovely little piece of metal basically adhered to your body because it melted to you. And that was what they were giving children and actually teaching the children, going, well, this is why we're doing it, so that, we could identify you, when the bombs come.
Oh, my God. That is horrible.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing when you're in the military and they that's why they give you a dog.
Sure, but you're an adult.
When you're in grammar school, when you're in grammar school and they, mommy, daddy, look at my new little dog tag.
Yikes.
That was a different step that, that took your mind to, and it took the reality of the duck and cover under your, because keep in mind, when that was happening, desks were made of wood and metal. Of course, that would have saved us all.
Of course, we were all covered up, and my hands will keep all nuclear fallout off the back of my head. Glenn, I appreciate the call. Thanks very much. I got to get to the news. Let's do this. Then it's news time. WGN. The snow has me a little panicked.
Why?
Well, I'm still in my wearing a sandal and sock.
I know.
And I bring this up only because it points out one of the, again, how screwed up our medical care is in this country. How the insurance companies have really, while they, I thank God every day I have good medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't. And you can see why some things are a little weird. Remember back in March where I did a show on a Sunday night and I was lamenting the fact that my leg was on fire and about eight sizes too big?
Yeah.
And I went home after that show, after being yelled at by listeners for not taking better care of myself,
mm-hmm.
and having a friend of ours who's a paramedic,
rightly so.
For sure, call the house and tell my wife, when he comes home, feel his leg, and if it's hot, get him right to the emergency.
Yeah.
So I go home that night, and next day I'm in the hospital. That night, I'm admitted mm-hmm. to the hospital. So last Sunday, I told you about having an operation on my toe.
Right.
Last week. Now, you've been under the knife. Have you ever had an operation where they didn't give you antibiotics just in case?
I don't remember getting antibiotics when they had to do surgery on my knuckles.
Wow. Too much dragging on the ground?
No. I tried to do a gymnastics move and... it's where you dive over someone and then do a forward roll.
How old were you?
I
pictured you doing that like last week.
I was in junior high.
Okay. All right. That makes more sense.
Well, I did I dove over the person.
Yeah.
And forgot to do the forward roll. And right. crunch. So they had to reset the knuckles.
Yeah.
And so there was a fracture in three of them. But I never got antibiotics. They gave me the shots for the pain they reset. But I never got antibiotics.
Okay.
And I didn't even get... I didn't take home antibiotics after the cancer surgery, but I think they gave it to me in the IV after the surgery for a few days.
Well, that's what I was... Okay, so I didn't... When I had the toe surgery,
mm-hmm.
It'd be a little over a week now, they gave me pain pills and told me to stay off my feet for the next couple of days. So mm-hmm. I did that. I learned from the first time, with the cellulite back in March, I learned from my hospital stay with the gallbladder surgery. 2017 right. sucked for me.
You were under the knife.
I know.
Why?
I can't. The first year in my entire life, and it better not, but it's already started in 2018. Anyway, I learned my lesson. Mm-hmm. So I took the pain medicine, like they said. I stayed off my feet for 3 days, just about, except to walk to the bathroom and up and down from the basement to the first floor. That's all I did. Mm-hmm. I was really good. Well, last week I come here to work because I'm a dedicated employee. And plus, I needed to get out of the house or I was going to kill somebody. And my leg, I feel it's not right. So I get home last Sunday night and I look down, and as I try to peel my sock off, it leaves the big rip. My foot, long story short, my foot and leg all the way up to my calf looked exactly the same as it did that Sunday night in March. Right
all
before.
Swollen and
yeah,
flaming.
Swollen, and it was about 1,000 degrees, and that might be off by 10, 12 degrees. But it was really hot, mm-hmm. and everything looked, it had this weird reddish, orange, crazy color. It's not the color of
like
skin.
An alien had taken over your lower leg.
Except I knew what it was. Oh. Because, you know, I've seen this movie before, and it doesn't end well.
Oh, God.
And it's, you know, so for the first time, I was kind of panicked. And I was telling my wife, look, if something happens, you sue this guy. You know, I'm going to lose my toe. They told me it was blah, blah, blah. I'm overreacting.
Right.
Because why not? Because I'm home and, you know,
that's kind of guy
I was
you
emotional.
Are. Yeah.
So I get into the doctor. I called. I had a doctor's appointment for, like, Tuesday. But the doctor said, listen, or Wednesday, he said, if anything happens, you know, you can call. And I'll, so I call Monday. I go, listen, the doctor said I should call if something was weird. Something's weird. Mm-hmm. I've got a very, my leg is, I'm sure I have an infection. Well, I go, sure enough, he takes off the dressing that's wrapped my, mm-hmm. my foot and my big toe are wrapped in. And
was there an alien attached to it?
Dude. In the parlance of the street,
yes.
Dude, it looked like a horror show. It was, and he's like,
I'm sorry.
Oh yeah, you definitely have an infection. And I'm like, really? I saved hundreds of thousands of dollars by not going to medical school. I knew I had an infection. And he's like, but the good news is, you know, we took care of the problem that, was keeping your foot, your toe from healing. So mm-hmm. now we know it's not that. We just know it's the infection. I'm like, uh-huh. But last time my foot looked like this, I was in the hospital for 4 days. Oh, yeah. We got to get some antibiotics into you right away. Didn't I give you antibiotics
Oops.
To start? And ding, ding, ding. No, you didn't. Should you have?
Oops.
Oh, no, we usually only, you know, no, we
no,
don't.
No. He said it was an infection the first time, didn't he?
No. No, the reason they did the surgery wasn't for an infection.
But, all right, never mind.
No, he said, he asked me if he had given me antibiotics after the surgery, which he had not.
But if he asked you, then one would think that he should have given them to you.
That's my point.
Exactly.
That's why if things hadn't gone better,
yeah,
there'd be some...
you'd be a rich
be
man
trouble.
Right now.
No, I, what are they going to give me for a big toe? unless I keep falling over. If Cody could go viral filming me falling over all the time,
oh, no.
And one, it'd be great for Cody's personal brand, which I can't believe I just said without getting punched in the throat. But two, it would also be grounds for a lawsuit, I'm sure. But anyway, so here's where the insurance comes in. Because he says to me, all right, we got to get antibiotics into you as soon as possible.
Uh-huh.
We're going to go strong. We're going to give you some Cipro. And I'm going to go 500 milligrams. Now, you're a big guy.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to tell you to take three of them, one tablet three times a day at 500 milligrams.
Right.
Don't do that. I want you to pick them up. Where's the pharmacy to your house? I go, it's a couple blocks from my house.
Okay.
That's good news. All right. So go pick up the. Now, I can see he's trying not to panic.
Right.
But he sees this is an infection. Serious infection.
So he's saying basically, he's thinking.
So he
that
says,
if you don't hurry it up.
Right. We got to hurry it up.
Yeah.
Because he says, I want you to pick up the pills. I want you to take one immediately.
Okay.
Then I want you to take one before you go to bed. What time do you go to bed? I go, I don't know, 10, 10:30.
Yeah.
Take one right before you go to bed. Then wake up and take another one.
Wait, wake up when?
In the morning.
Oh,
but early.
Okay.
Wake up early in the morning.
Oh, okay.
Take another one. And then start the three a day. And I'm like, and should I be worried? No, you shouldn't be worried. I'm like, really? No. Everything will be fine. Listen, we fixed the initial problem. It's going to be fine. The sutures are still in place. Everything's fine. Except that when he took off the initial bandage, I was so swollen and infected that it pulled off like a couple layers of skin off my toe. That's, you know. But anyway.
Yikes.
So now I go out and he's rewrapped my foot and he's like, listen, I want you to come back in here. This is Monday. Because I want you to come back in here on, next week. But if something happens, I want to see you. Because we're going to get, trust me, by the time I see you next week, this is going to be terrific.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay. So I go out and I make my appointment, and all of a sudden I'm leaving and he comes running out. He's calling to the receptionist, and I can't remember her name. He's calling to the receptionist. Then he turns the corner and he sees me. He's like, oh, good. This is what got me. He goes, your insurance isn't going to be a problem. So I'm going to go with the 750 milligram tablets of Cipro.
Oh, my.
And I'm like, wait a minute. So because you thought my insurance might be an issue, you were giving me less medicine than I really need. And then now you found out I have, again, thank God, we have good insurance. So now I can get the medicine that's really going to kick things into gear.
Right.
I didn't say all of that because I just went, okay. But in my mind, this is all going on, and I have this conversation with my wife when I get home because it's disturbing. And I know in this day and age, unfortunately, that's what a lot of us have to go through when we're dealing with some medical problems. All right, there's some more to this story. I want to hear if you've had any sort of incident like this where, you know, the doctor probably should have given you something when an incident happened and didn't until you went back. 312-981-7200. I'll finish the saga after this, WGN. We're talking about this, the foot thing and the fact that my doctor was going to give me one medicine and then realized, oh, you've got pretty good insurance. And so then, you know, gave me more. This is after the insurance company I told you last week wasn't going to let me get my painkillers because they thought I was an opioid addict.
Right. And I think that's, after you mentioned what you just did, I think that's probably why he ran back out.
Maybe.
And upped it because I think there's probably for that, there might be limits.
I don't know. So now I'm on this Cipro. So I had to pay an unscheduled visit to the doctor because I'm an idiot. So Monday I go in, I get the antibiotics, I go home. He tells me, stay off your foot. Well, Thursday, you remember Thursday here in Chicago?
Yeah.
Unlike today, it was almost 60.
Right.
It was crazy.
Gorgeous day.
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
It was warm.
It was warm. It was overcast and rainy and everything else, but it was warm.
All right.
And so I think to myself, hey, Brian, how many more 60-degree days are you going to get in January? You need to get outside and take down those outside Christmas decorations. That's what you need to do. And I see that it's misty.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, what am I going to do to keep my foot dry? Because I got it in a nice Teva sandal with a sock. But a sock's not going to keep my bandage dry. So I get myself a nice grocery bag, like I did last week when I was coming into the
show.
Nice
plastic one.
Sure.
No holes.
I think it might have been, no holes at all.
Right.
Might have been a Mariano's bag, a Jewel bag, who knows.
Uh-huh.
But I wrap it around and I'm fine and I'm walking and now it's raining. The entire time I'm out taking this stuff down, it's raining.
Well, of course.
But I'm bound and determined
right.
that I'm getting these decorations down today. Cause had I waited, the ground would have froze again. It would have been a nightmare.
Right.
So I'm taking everything down. And at one point I move my foot and I'm like, oh no, my toe feels wet.
Oh, geez.
I know. So I go in the garage and I sit down. And I take off my sandal, I take off my plastic bag, and lo and behold, I can see the big toe area is wet. So now I put on two more plastic bags. So I have a total of three plastic bags on my foot, but the damage is done. So I finish taking everything down, and I go in the house, and I'm looking now at just my bandaged foot, and my toe is very wet. And I'm like, oh no, the one thing they told
me.
I know I did. I don't know. These bags are not as, you know, they're only charging a penny for them. They must not be good plastic.
Right.
They're very porous. Don't, trust me, if you're in medical need and you need to desperately keep something dry, grocery bags are not going to do it.
Okay.
For the shower, I had purchased a nice cast cover. So that has kept, I've been able to shower because, again, I'm always clean.
Mm-hmm.
That's been fine. But now tonight, I have three grocery bags. I'm going to triple bag it.
Okay.
Which is not a euphemism for some, you know, safe sex mantra. I'm going to actually put three bags on my foot and hope that I can
really
get
really snowy out.
It's
going
to be. Yeah. Well, all I have to do is get from the building to my car, and from my garage to my house. So whatever snow falls on my bag, I can, like, say I get wet from here to the car, I right. can peel off the top layer of bag.
Oh, okay.
Then I can drive home.
I gotcha.
And I'm still double bagged.
Uh-huh.
So then I can scurry into the house from the garage and peel off the other two bags and I should be okay.
Alright.
You know, that would be fine. But now I have to call the doctor on Thursday and say to the receptionist, who's already seen me earlier than my regular appointment, I was like, hi, hey, I was out running some errands today, and I think my bandage got wet.
Mm-hmm.
Would you ask the doctor if he wants me to come in or if I should just, you know, like use a, my thought was to just use a blow dryer.
Yeah.
Just for sure. Prop up my foot, just mm-hmm. blow dry it.
Because yeah.
I saved hundreds of thousands of dollars by not going to medical school. So I'm fully qualified to diagnose how to treat wound bandaging.
Exactly.
That is wet. Yeah. Of course. What does a hair dryer do? It dries things.
Yeah.
What's the problem with my foot? It's wet. Ipso facto, hair dryer, everything's perfect.
I'm coming to you next time. I need to have something dried off.
Of course,
that
I can.
Should be dry.
I can dry things. I know what to do. Okay. I know you triple bag it.
Yeah.
For the more economically minded amongst us,
mm-hmm.
Maybe you drop $18 for a nice seal thing that you can use a cast for,
right.
Or you just use the hair dryer. Anyway, so she says, "Hold on, let me ask," and she's like, "Yeah."
Were they laughing in the background?
Oh, I'm sure they were. They were laughing when I walked in. Honest to God, she was like, "Oh, long time no see. Are you just gonna live here?" And I'm like, "I know I'm an idiot. You don't have to. You know, you don't have to pile on. Seriously." So I go in, and now I have to tell the doctor why my toe is wet. And he's like, "Yeah, well, you were smart to call." He goes, "I said, well, could I have used?" I ask him because he spent the hundreds of thousands of dollars on medical school.
Yeah, he's an expert.
Sure, could I have used my blow dryer? And he just looked at me like. They let you out by yourself? You're just able to, they just let you wander the streets? Nobody stops you? Everything's okay? And I took that as a no. I took that as a maybe not the best course of action. But he gave me, every time I've been there, I've gotten different tape. So I have a beautiful royal blue tape on my foot.
Wow.
Now. And I've done my best to keep it dry and not do too much with it. That's my alarm went off earlier, so I've been I'm doing everything I'm supposed to.
Oh, you're still taking the antibiotics?
Oh, yeah, I got it. Okay. That was 10 days of the strongest antibiotics he could find because he knew I was, I told him before he made the first cut, I said, "Listen, I'm going to Mardi Gras. This will be healed, right?"
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I had a 2-week cushion from the time he told me it was going to heal.
Mm-hmm.
There was an extra 2 weeks. So even if the infection puts me back a couple days, I still should be fine. Because all my medical decisions are based around the fact that I want to go drink in New Orleans. That's
right.
All I think
about. Right.
All right.
You have your priorities.
Of course. Quick question. Yes. Hi, Cody.
Quick question from a listener wants to know, have you gone on any medical supply websites to see if there's a bag you could put on your foot?
Well, I said for the shower I did.
Mm-hmm.
I did not. I haven't for outside, but I was thinking. You remember when they used to make those old totes like they used to call them rubbers, the black things that went over your shoe.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I was thinking maybe I can find some of those and just slide it over my foot and put it inside my sandal.
Also, do you think your foot could have been wet from sweat?
That's another. Could have been double. Could have been.
This is an astute listener.
Well. I thought that too, listener. Very good point. Because the other day I left the bag on a little too long and my foot started to sweat. So it could have been that. But this was soaked through, you know, when your feet get wet and your sock is wet. I know the difference between sweaty foot and swamp foot. I'm, you know, not that stupid.
Don't we all?
We all do. All right, listen, we got to do the news because Roger wants to talk about something other than my foot. And I don't blame him. My foot story fascinating, but there's other things to talk about in the world, and we'll do that in about 38 seconds. People telling me thank you for telling me that gardening boots, big old gardening boots might work, and that they have those totes at Walmart. So I may have to make a quick trip or send my lovely wife out tomorrow in the elements because, you know, she's got too good for
me. Well, it's your day off. She's got to be out anyway, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
I think we'll both go. I'll just triple or quadruple bag it depending on the day.
Yeah.
Somebody else was saying Menards plastic bag's very heavy. So,
ooh.
I don't know. We'll have to go check that out.
All right.
Yeah. We'll see. Tomorrow we all may be depressed anyway.
Because, you know, tomorrow is Blue Monday. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
The third, Monday of January, or January 15th this year, is Blue Monday. It's made up basically by a PR firm where they say it's going to be the most depressing day of the year. And everybody, because now all your, the Christmas bills are starting to come in. You've been back to work after the fun of the holidays. Mm. And now tomorrow just go, oh, everybody's going to be depressed.
Plus, you're starting to get notices from your tax accountant saying, you need to start coming in and let's get this done.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
That's true. So, yes, just in case you're, in case you wake up tomorrow and go, boy, I feel more miserable than normal, which is, it's pretty much every day. Every day I wake up and go, man, I feel more miserable than normal. Well, welcome to the world. So that's it. There's no foundation. The mental health community, of course, hates it because they say you are diminishing mental illness, making depression seem like something you can just get over. So they don't like it. It is, but they say if you're feeling bad, you should exercise. Maybe you should start a new project. Maybe you should watch a fun movie.
Ooh.
On Blue Monday. They recommend Bridesmaids, Superbad, Before Sunrise, The Shawshank Redemption, which for the most part is not uplifting till the end. But a lot of it very depressing. Rocky, always a feel good.
Yeah.
As good as it gets, When Harry Met Sally, or the brand new Coco. Have you seen that, the animated feature Coco?
No, have not yet. The kids have, but I haven't.
I've heard it's wonderful.
Yeah.
Everybody I know who's seen it said it was wonderful. We watched a couple movies this weekend because, again, Roger, the screeners.
Yep.
Have you gotten all your screeners?
I think we've gotten all of them.
I believe
we
have
got a couple
as well.
Big packages on Friday.
Did you get the Netflix box?
Yes.
Sure. You can.
Yep. But I've seen already the Stranger Things.
Okay, I have not.
Have not seen The Crown. Heard that's supposed to be pretty good. And Bridget likes the British stuff.
Okay.
We've only seen, of the screeners, we saw I, Tanya. And
I saw it. I liked it.
Yeah, it was good.
Watched I, Tanya. We watched The Big Sick.
Okay.
Which was great.
You did like that, huh?
Yes, I like The Big Sick quite a bit.
I saw
did not care for Lady Bird as much.
We just got that, so we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I didn't care.
Really?
My wife liked it. I didn't like it. It was fine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Saoirse Ronan, nice Irish actress.
How do you say it again?
Saoirse.
Saoirse Ronan. Okay.
Saoirse Ronan. Yeah. I believe that's correct. But anyway, it was fine. Just,
Darkest Hour? Yeah.
I've got it. Haven't watched it yet.
Very
Gary Oldman as Winston Churchill.
Yes.
I want to see it.
Oh, beautiful.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So that was, this, but tomorrow will be blue because I'll wake up and my house will just be a house.
No, watch a fun
Christmas
musical. Like an old musical.
I don't have time for that.
Oh, come on.
Ain't nobody got time for musicals, Roger.
You know what I watched this weekend?
What did you watch?
Galaxy Quest.
I have never seen that with
you're
him.
You're kidding.
Allen.
That show's it's a great movie.
I just watched it again about a month ago. It was because it was free on Amazon Prime.
Really?
And I'm searching through trying to find something to watch to, you know, because I'm so active. And I saw it there, and I go,
In between Facebook screens.
Well, I was multitasking.
Of course you were.
And I said, it's free, and I have not seen it in a long time. I says, I'm wondering if it's still
as
cool.
My wife says it's... hold on. My wife is correcting me.
Okay. How do you say it?
Saoirse. Saoirse is the queen from...
Game of Thrones.
Oh.
Saoirse. Saoirse. All right.
Ronan.
Wow. Weird
Ronan.
To know my wife is listening to the program.
Yeah.
Very exciting. Little support on the home front.
She's got your number when you get home.
TV must have gone out. Bad weather. Must have lost DirecTV.
Maybe there was a false alarm in the suburbs.
Could be. So she turned on the radio, hoping to get important information, and she somehow landed on this program. Oh,
wow.
Because you had a preset on all the dials.
Right, of course I do. Turn it on and knock the knobs off, man. There's no knobs on a radio.
Wow.
Right. It's all push button anyway.
Watch Galaxy Quest.
All right, I'll watch Galaxy Quest.
If you've watched any Star Trek, especially the original series.
Yeah.
Great, great
very
satire.
Funny.
I'm telling you what, if I'm Menards, you got to advertise more about your bags, because we're getting so many texts saying
really?
That Menards bags are the best. You can fill them full of water. They won't drip. I go to Menards because I like to save big money. Who doesn't like to save big money?
Yeah.
I didn't know that their bags were so multi-purposed. I got it.
Wow.
Maybe
they, well, I wonder if they sell them by the bundle.
I don't know. By the gross?
Yeah.
Just get one of those giant boxes?
Mm-hmm.
That is the most low-rent healthcare I could provide myself. Get a box of Menards bags.
Yeah.
And a box of bags sounds, it doesn't sound right.
When I think Menards, I just think of the adventures of being married to somebody from the East Coast.
Yes.
Because we drove by Menards around Christmas time, and she goes, what's Menards? And it's like, how do you
How do you not know Menards?
Well, because she's not from Lee's here. House. Exactly. It's fun. She had never been to a Culver's before I met her.
Oh, no Butterburgers for the wife?
No.
Did you take her to Menards? Don't you have a do-it-yourself project around the house?
We don't own a house.
Well, you live in a place. So you have to put up hooks to hang more dragons?
I did.
Or do you have to build some sort of video? Or hang your swords?
Yeah.
Do you need something that you could build or repair? Do you have a light switch, a faceplate that you could change? Anything?
I do need a sword hanger. No, I used one of the drill bits that Roger bequeathed me.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about those. Yeah.
Yeah.
How are they working out?
To hang a fantastic. Thank you again.
Thank you very much.
He gave me some tools.
And, right.
Yeah. I had to drill. I got a picture frame for this.
Drill something?
For this lithograph I got at the Guns N' Roses concert in Seattle. And but the frame didn't come pre-drilled at all. You had to drill your own thing and attach the wire on the back. I had to actually drill a hole in the frame, which I'm like really? They can't just drill a couple. I mean, even if they don't put the screws in, just put a couple holes
in there. That doesn't, because when you're trying to hang those picture hangers, that's tough because they little tiny nails and stuff, and that's how you tap it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like
and then you're always afraid of breaking the frame or bending it a certain way, and it just
Exactly. It's a wood frame. Like I'm not a tool guy.
You're not handy.
I'm not like Tim Allen, star of Galaxy Quest.
Galaxy Quest, you say good movie? Is that a good movie?
It's a good flick.
Galaxy Quest. Oh, is it on Netflix?
It's on no. Why nothing not? Is Casey and I have never once been like, let's watch a movie. Let's check Netflix. Oh, there it is. Never once.
Really?
Never. Not a single time. About anything. Nothing. No movie I've ever wanted to watch in the last 2 years has been on Netflix.
See, I go to Netflix for the new shows that I hear about.
Shows! This is my problem with Netflix.
Shows and specials. Comedy specials.
This is my problem.
Letterman's new series is coming on there. It's going to be great.
Well, I might watch that.
I saw it already.
Is it?
Yeah, it's on Netflix already.
Okay.
I saw the trailer for Glow.
Yes, watched it. Terrific.
Okay, so I see the trailer and I'm like, wow, that looks great. I would love to watch that movie. And then I find out, no, you have to dedicate 25 hours of your life if you want to see this story. No, I'm not doing that.
An hour.
I can't do that with Black Mirror and Stranger Things and that show and this show and the other show. Punisher. Like, no. What American has time?
A lot, obviously. I hear people binge watching all the time and I wonder where they get that amount of leisure.
Is that all anybody does, is binge watch?
Be, right?
How is productivity doing so well in 2017 and 2018 with the economy when everyone is just watching 50 hours
Cody
of TV every week?
Cody asked a lot of pertinent questions. I have no answers.
Look, I play a lot of video games, so I don't judge, but
that's why he's got no time for
it. I don't play nearly that much. I play probably single-digit number of hours of video games a week. Mm-hmm. Double if I'm lucky.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, the problem is there's a lot of quality programming. And you can't possibly watch it all. And yet, I have that FOMO if I don't see all my programs. I have my fear of missing out.
Yeah.
And so we've got a ton that we've recorded on the DVR that I won't be able to watch. There's a number of Netflix shows that I feel I should watch as a man who comments on the human condition. Is that what I do?
Sure. Yes.
All right. Thank you, Roger.
So I'm told.
So that's, I watch it. But then, I've been trying to watch The Punisher. Well, I'll try to watch it, late at night before I go to, the last thing before I go to sleep. I fall asleep halfway through each episode. So now I've invested a half hour, but now I have to go back the next day and restart. And
the only way I could see myself getting caught up on TV shows is, have you ever watched a TV show at faster speed?
What? No.
No.
I had a friend in college that would watch everything at double speed with subtitles.
No.
So that doesn't sound enjoyable at all.
I listen to podcasts at 1.3 speed.
Do you really?
Yeah, 1.3x.
And it doesn't sound like this? Everybody's talking like this?
That sounds great.
Really?
Yeah.
Where do you adjust the speed?
I use Player FM as the app that I use. A lot of that, actually, I think Apple's podcast app actually lets you listen faster, but most players let you go in increments of 0.5. And if you listen to somebody at double speed or 1.5 times speed, it loses a lot, and it's really hard to understand a lot of it.
But 1.3.
I find 1.3x, and then if it's like my friend's in Australia, if I'm listening to like Game My Fallon's Australia.
But you have to listen to his backwards, right?
That one I got to slow down a little bit. The accents are a bit much for me, but yeah. It's called Podfast Listeners is now, they have a term for it.
Podfast Listeners.
Podfast, because they fast, listen
yes,
faster.
Yeah, I
just
like
not
that.
Enough time in the day.
No, see, I like that. Yeah. So you're done a little quicker. One of our texts are saying Galaxy Quest is, in fact, on Netflix.
It's not on streaming Netflix.
Oh.
I should have. Nothing I've ever looked for is on streaming Netflix.
Wait, what's the difference?
Do they still do discs?
Does Netflix still do discs? Apparently, you can get anything on a disc, but who has time for that? I don't have time to, like, think about what I want to watch.
Put it in your queue and hope that it comes. That's why I didn't get Netflix, or I was not an early adopter, because people are like, well, you get these DVDs, and they come in the mail, and then you watch them and send them back. I'm like, what? No. Huh?
No.
If I have a free night where I'm going to watch a DVD, I'll go to Blockbuster. Because it's 1990, or Family Video, or one of my local video establishments. You know, I'm not going to order it so they come, and then I got the pressure of, oh, I got to mail them back. It's a lot of hassle. Now I like streaming. You go, hey, here it is. Boom, everything's good. All right, let's take a break. Because a lot of times you get all revved up, and then you think to yourself, you know what, I could probably use a drink. Maybe I'll go to my local watering hole, and I'll get my favorite drink. And I'm sure everybody there, it's like Cheers. Everybody knows your name. You just want to hang out with people. But your bartender is judging you. And I'll tell you why. Yeah. We'll do that after this on WGN. More snow coming down outside the Allstate Showcase studio. Hopefully you are being safe where you are. Roger will have all the details and the weather coming up in the news. I enjoy, even though I'm 2 weeks into dry January, I do enjoy normally going out and having a cocktail. Normally that cocktail is a beer, and that's fine, because I just like beer. I've realized how much I like beer, and it's, you know, it's a curse. 2 weeks in, we'll see. My goal is no beer until Mardi Gras. And
well,
no.
When is that? March?
No, February.
Oh.
I'll be there February 9th.
So that's only a few weeks away.
A few weeks.
Yeah.
No big deal. I can handle
it. You can do it.
Of course I can. What am I, weak-willed? No, but if you go out, you might think, oh, I'm just ordering things, and nobody cares. The bartender doesn't care, but they do care. Cody, what's your go-to drink when you go out to a bar?
Ah, boy.
Let me see if it falls on one of these.
Highball.
Highball. So highball, do you even know what a highball is?
I know that there's whiskey in it.
Okay, it's a highball.
And correct. I like to drink it. I've been a G&T guy sometimes,
too. Oh, gin and tonic. All right, that's not on this list. A list, according to alcohol.org, they conducted a survey asking bartenders to spill their thoughts on everything from the most annoying bar behaviors to which drinks make them think negatively of customers. Now, here are the top five. Let me see if you, what would you think one of the top five, if I order one of these, what would make a bartender think less of me?
Jägerbomb.
Jägerbomb is number two, Cody. Very good. 40% of the bartender surveyed said that makes them think less of the person who ordered. Very good, Cody.
How about a Bloody Mary?
No, Bloody Mary not on the list. Especially, oh, no, people love Sunday mornings. You go, oh, a nice Bloody.
And having your meal inside your drink?
Yeah, the more the better.
Yeah.
What else would get you judged? I want to say some kind of martini, like a classic, like a Manhattan or a Cosmopolitan. But
no, but you were on the right track.
Harvey Wallbanger.
Nope.
What?
We're not going drinking with Mad Men circa 1961. I'll be honest. If I'm at a bar and you order a Harvey Wallbanger next to me, I'll judge you, but I'll judge you as the master of your universe. Because if you have the huevos rancheros, you walk into a nightclub, pulsing club, and that's my EDM, Cody. Was that anywhere close?
That's pretty good.
My music.
I was waiting for it to drop.
Boom. Oh, I drop it like it's hot.
Wow.
And and you order a Harvey Wallbanger.
Mm-hmm.
I'm buying you that Harvey Wallbanger.
Thank you.
So if you ever see me at a bar, sidle up next to me, order yourself a Harvey Wallbanger.
Free.
It's on me.
There you go, buddy.
No. Harvey Wallbanger.
I'm gonna say other bombs are probably on there, maybe a car bomb.
Dude, yes, very good. That was number five, Irish car bomb. 30% of the bartenders said that got them, they judged you for that.
I am shocked.
Why are they, I don't know drinks because I don't go to bars and get drinks. I don't even have drinks
at
home. So I don't understand this. Why some of these are judgmental and some of them aren't.
Oh, you would know if you knew the people that drink those drinks.
Yeah, I think it's the people who drink them.
Yeah, I used to actually
Shirley Temple? No, texter Shirley Temple.
I cannot believe Irish Car Bomb has survived the great social justicing of the 2010s.
The what has the Irish Car Bomb?
How is that still a drink name we're even allowed to say?
Because people don't think that you can discriminate against the Irish.
So you can just offend Irish people.
Of course, we can take it.
Because you know, like, I mean, if you try and say that drink name over in Ireland, that's not okay.
No, it's not okay.
It's like really not okay. I cannot believe people are still allowed to say that drink name.
People are dumb. all right, so Jägerbomb, 40% said that they would judge you harshly. Irish Car Bomb, 30%. You were on the right track.
Sex on the Beach.
Yes, Cody, number what four. 38% of bartenders, of the 260 bartenders, said that they thought less of customers after ordering these drinks. Cody has three of the five. We're going to see.
I have not seen this list.
I know, but you're doing very well. You obviously spend a lot of time in bars or watching the faces of bartenders. Double shot of Jameson, no ice? No, they're going to think you're a man. Or a good drinker, a woman who likes to drink good whiskey.
Was this a Chicago-specific thing?
No. This is, no, it was not. It was alcohol.org, so they did all over.
Okay, so Malort's not on the list then.
No.
I will say, it's not because I spend a lot of time in bars, it's because I know these drinks have taught me when to avoid a bar.
Yes.
These drinks have taught me why to avoid
bars.
Here
we go. I've got the number one answer texted in by somebody in the 414. At 49%, so almost half the bartenders questioned, said if you order this drink, they will think less of you, the Appletini.
Mm.
Yes.
Even the name sounds like they would think less of you.
Appletini.
Yeah.
The 773 asks, how about a Long Island iced tea? That got an honorable mention. Honorable mention, along with light beer. But light beer is so, it's everywhere. I don't see why that would bother. They judge you because you drink a light beer?
Maybe if other like craft beers are available.
Maybe, yes. If I go into a brew pub and I, you know, and there's a bunch of delicious beer that these people have brewed, or there's a huge sampling of craft beer, and I go, can I have a light? All right, I can see that. I can see a beer tender judging you for that. Some beer snob. But as a guy who's looking at the points values of all his ales and lagers and thinking to himself, oh, my Lord, I got to pull back a little bit. No, Kurt, Hot Toddy, not on the list. But a good guess. You and Roger should hang out.
Yeah, I like Hot Toddies.
So it was Appletini, Jägerbomb, a frozen cocktail was number three, 39%. Judge you harshly if you do that. Sex on the Beach, number four, as Cody said, and Cody also got number five, the Irish Car Bomb.
But what frozen cocktail?
Just any frozen cocktail.
If any?
If you're at a bar on a busy Saturday night and you want a frozen cocktail, it takes longer to make, takes longer to clean up, it's just a hassle, they're going to think you're a tool. Unless you're at like a tiki bar place, where there's a million frozen cocktails.
That's fair.
Or they have them coming out, you're at one of those... ever been to one of those Fat Tuesdays or something? Looks like 7-Eleven Slurpee machines, but they're filled with alcoholic drinks.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
Got a whole wall of them.
Yeah.
Like, down in New Orleans, there are Daiquiri Kings, stuff like that. I've seen them called all sorts of stuff. The original Daiquiri place. But, oh, man, those are fun.
A texter texted, I'm surprised Fuzzy Navel wasn't on there.
Is a Fuzzy Navel still a thing?
Mm-hmm.
I have, what's in a fuzzy? Orange juice, right?
Orange juice and peach tree schnapps.
Oh, man.
It's like drinking sugar.
Oh.
Ugh.
I'm debating. I got a nice belt flask for Christmas to wear with my kilt. I'm debating what to put in the flask. We'll have to, we'll put that up for conversation another time. It's almost news time, which means we have to do this. Then Karen will be here to answer your legal questions on WGN. Karen Conti is here. She is every Sunday to help you out, answer your legal questions. Good to see you. Have
good
you adjusted
to, see you.
To being back in the U.S. for
I sort
for
of
a week
have,
now?
Yes. I feel like I'm in Norway.
Listen, Norway is very ideal. I hear the people there are wonderful.
You know?
I want to bring them over. I want to hang out with them. I don't know much about Norway. I'm going to do
socialized
a lot of research.
Everything.
Yes.
Like 90% taxes.
Wow. Is that right?
I don't know. I made that
That's
up.
That's a lot. That seems
I've
high.
Been reading about Norway just because I want to know what's so great about it.
Right. Me too. I'm going to have to do some research and maybe head over. Maybe do a swap. But if it's so great... why would Norwegians want to come?
Why would they?
Yeah, if everything is so wonderful. So, yeah, I don't know. We got to do that. We got to build a wall. We got to get people out of poop holes, different places. There's a lot going on here, Karen. I got to ask you about this. And we hadn't, there's other things to talk about. But did you see, have you seen that new Bruce Rauner commercial? Wiretap stuff?
No, I have
okay,
not.
So... he's playing some of the wiretap tapes from Rob Blagojevich and J.B. Pritzker. And Patty Blagojevich was on all the TV channels the other day going, hey, this is wrong because there's some sort of order that these tapes were not going to be released. But their defense is, hey, we're playing parts of this tape that was in a Tribune story about the tapes.
Ah, interesting.
I just found it very interesting that, you know, all of a sudden these tapes that, because they, you know, you remember better than anybody, during the Blagojevich trial, they were saying, listen, there's parts of these tapes that might exonerate him.
Exactly.
We want those played. And they're like, no. We're going to just play these parts of the tape.
But that was part of, you know, that was really, I think, one of his strongest grounds on appeal, that the judge, you know, he talked a lot. Blagojevich had, you know, diarrhea of the mouth. And he, you know, if you put it all in context, what he was saying was innocuous. That was his defense the whole time.
Right.
And the judge ruled that, no, I'm not going to make the jury listen to hours and hours and hours of tapes talking about groceries and things that are irrelevant. But on the other hand, you know, maybe that talking really would have put things in perspective. The idea that there was a protective order on those tapes, I mean, generally speaking, after the trial is over, anything that was introduced or attempted to be introduced, I would think would be a matter of public record. But I'd have to go back and look it through the whole file to see if there actually was a protective order, meaning a protective order is when the judge says whatever the information is, the document, the tape, has to be protected from the public, and you have to actually issue a specific order saying that it can't be released. And I don't remember that.
Yeah, she claimed on Fox 32, this is a quote, there is a federal court order not allowing these tapes to see the light of day. We fought so hard in court to try to get tapes just like this. And then Rauner's people are saying that it is a perfectly legal conversation between, this is still her. They're saying that it came from a Tribune story and it's part of the tapes that were public record.
That doesn't surprise me that the Rauner people are trying to do that. They did that with Judy Bart Topinka. Do you remember that? She was dancing with George Ryan at some political event, and they kept playing that over and over again, saying, what was she thinking, you know,
right.
after Ryan went to jail, as if that she, you know, she knew she was dancing with a felon and for some reason was tainted by that.
Well, they did that last week after Oprah's big speech at the Golden
Globes.
Picture with Harvey Weinstein.
Well, everyone posed with the guy.
Sure.
That doesn't mean that she knew about it. That doesn't mean that she served as sex bait for all these poor women.
Yes, it does. Don't you believe the Internet? That's exactly what it means. If it's on the Internet, it means she knew, she was complicit. She did all of this stuff. Unbelievable. Let's talk about, real quickly, about Hawaii yesterday.
Okay.
Now,
it's a good place to think about, isn't it?
Well, until Saturday morning at 8 o'clock, it was a beautiful place to think about. You sent me things. Hey, why don't we talk? So, you said there might be potential loss. How could there be a potential lawsuit out of something that the government is saying? Listen, we screwed up. We take full responsibility. I'm guessing mental torments, because I don't know how I would feel during those 38 minutes. I was talking about this earlier. I can't imagine the stress and the panic and the fear that you felt for those 38 minutes. But what could people
do? I just, of course, am speculating, because I always think when someone screws up, you say, they just screwed up. But that's what we call negligence.
Ah.
That's the legal term. That's the layman's explanation of what negligence is, which is someone who is supposed to do something with a duty of care, breaches that duty, and as a result, bad things happen.
Okay.
That's really put very simply. I haven't heard anything where I can say definitively that there was some death or some loss or some injury or something that resulted directly from this mistake. But let's just say that there were something that happened like that. Let's say someone tried to get their kids down the basement and they fell down the stairs, or they drove too quickly to get someone somewhere and there was an accident that we could just say was tied to that false alarm.
Sure, the only reason they were going there is because
exactly.
They were fleeing because of this alarm.
Exactly.
Okay.
But the question probably is, if it were just, if Hawaii was just a company, a private company, there may be some liability. But because it's a state, it has what we call sovereign immunity, mm-hmm. which means that back in the old days, the king was always right and the king could never be sued. Now we have a limited liability for government. So you have to prove more than just negligence. You got to prove that it was willful and wanton or reckless in some way, almost intentional. And from what I understand, this guy did it twice. He hit the button once.
Yeah, I think so.
And pressed, yes, I mean to do this. You know, so is that willful and wanton and reckless? Probably not.
Yeah.
Did he mean to do it? Probably not.
I mean, I've been at Jewel, and when it says, is this amount okay? Instead of hitting yes, I hit no, just by mistake.
Of course.
You know?
Of course.
Does that make me, you know? Is the umbrella of negligence any sort of, as you said, a layman's, any sort of mistake? Do they all fall under negligence?
That would, yeah, probably.
Any mistake is negligence.
So negligence would be medical malpractice. You go in and they remove the wrong, you know, kidney. You know, that's negligence. They owe you a duty of care, and they violate it by operating on the wrong body part. A standard car accident is negligence, right?
Okay.
You know, almost anything, a slip and fall in a grocery store. Let's just say that Jewel knew that there was a spill, and that spill was there for 2 hours and didn't clean it up, and three right. people tripped on it, and then the fourth person got hurt really badly. That's probably negligence. Hotels get sued for negligence when they don't have proper security procedures. Almost anything where you owe a duty and the duty was violated.
Okay. So there might be, they can't. No, nobody's getting sued in Hawaii.
That doesn't mean that people won't try.
But it's not.
But, and certainly if it's just stress, those are hard cases to prove. Because
exactly.
even though stress can be damaging,
sure.
I mean, I wouldn't have
yeah,
wanted to spend those
somebody
minutes.
Had a heart attack.
Yeah.
You know, or something.
But again, those, unless there's really hard damages like a fall or a death or something that is a significant physical injury or accident, then I think that there's probably going to be no value. Suit. That's
okay.
not to say that there won't be suits brought.
Karen Conti is here. Some people calling in. We will get to your legal questions on the other side. But how do people get a hold of you during the week? We always like to tell them that.
Sure. You can call me at 312-332-7800. Give me all the facts. It's a confidential line. Or my new email address is wgn@askkarenconti.com.
All right. More with Karen and your calls, 312-981-7200. We'll do that after this, WGN.
Let's do it.
Joe is in Rockford. Oh, are you related to Cody at all, Joe?
I hope not.
Fair enough. Fair enough, Joe. Touche.
Question for you. Hey, my wife and I, when we were married 10 years ago, we had a living trust, and we signed everything that we wanted to have signed. 5 years later, the marriage fell apart. We got divorced. But then we got remarried, and everything is wonderful. My question to you, I know the living trust is probably invalid, but are our wishes still there? And I know this isn't something you want to hear. I'm sorry, I'm probably not what a lawyer wants to hear, but I don't want to pay another $2,000 to hit the reset button.
Yeah. Generally speaking, when you get divorced, your estate plan, whether it's a will or a trust, is deemed to be void. And you're getting remarried doesn't probably restart it, because then you have to, once it's deemed to be void, you have to do it all over again. You know, I'm just wondering, if you go to your attorney and you say, can I just sign the same thing? I don't want anything revised. I don't want anything changed.
Mm-hmm.
Your lawyer might say, well, there's been some laws that change things, and Joe, maybe it would be in your best interest to have this redrafted. You could always say no. The other thing you could do is you could take a copy of it, you know, and sign it again and have the witnesses there and redate it, and you could try to do that. I always hesitate, though, Joe, because it's so important to get this right so you don't have problems down the line. And $2,000, I don't think the lawyer would charge you that much if he's just going to have you re-sign it and make sure it's correct. Especially in your neck of the woods, it's a little cheaper to get legal services there.
The first time, there's a lot more work that goes into it.
Well, right. But, you know, lawyers always want to ask you questions. What has changed? Do you have other assets? Mm-hmm. And, you know, they do that to cover their you-know-what, because they don't want to be sued for negligence because they have not asked you the proper questions. And I get that. But, like I said, you could take the blank form of that, redate it, get new witnesses, and go ahead and sign it and hope for the best.
Sounds great.
All right, Joe, good luck. Can I make it just a comment,
sure.
Brian? I want to tell you how important it is to get an estate plan. I have a man who works in my building. He's a wonderful gentleman. His mother died, and there were like 3 or 4 siblings, and there was a nice house, and they didn't really do it. There was no will, no estate plan. And the kids kind of started grumbling about who was going to own it. So they wanted to take it and put it in everyone's name and then sell it.
Okay.
Well, that's not that That's not that easy. There was, you know, she died without a will, so the house is in her name.
Oh.
How do you get the will transferred to the children? You would think,
right. Oh,
that there's an easy form to fill out. No, there isn't. And I'm not an estate lawyer, but I did get him an estate planning lawyer, and there were two avenues he could take, none of which were easy. One of them involved opening up a probate estate in court.
That doesn't sound like fun.
No.
Or,
and I'm just thinking,
wow. Even
if you think all I have is this house, and I'm not saying that you need a will for that or a trust. Maybe it's just another method by
right. Putting
someone on a deed or something like that where you could protect your interests and not have your kids, first of all, bicker.
Yeah.
And then not be able to sell the house because they can't get the title in their names. So no one can sell it. I mean, what a disaster.
That's horrible.
Yeah. So
and we hear all the time. I mean, in the years we've been together, so many people, I've had arguments with my siblings over,
yes. You
know, what happened with our parents and, you know, what we're going to do.
Yeah, and it's not as easy as you think, even if you have a little bit. And sometimes, only when you have a little bit, people fight even more.
Yes, because they're trying for those scraps.
That's right.
See, and while I am not an attorney, I have learned some things sitting across from you, and one of them is nothing is easy.
No.
When it comes to the law. Nothing is as cut and dry as you think, well, this should be simple.
Right.
No, it's not that
simple. You know, and I wish the law were more user-friendly. I wish people could go to a computer and just put in your problem and have it spit out an answer,
right. And
then you sign it and it's done. But, you know, and I, you know, a lot of people blame lawyers for making it complicated. I don't know. I just think there are a lot of ifs and what ifs
mm-hmm. And
loopholes and those things.
Right.
And those are all legislators made those kinds of tax loopholes
yes. And
things. So we have to all be cognizant of them because we can't know it all.
Let's go to Mike. He's in St. Charles. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Brian. Yeah, Karen, this might not exactly be a legal question, but my nephew, he lived in a house, and then he moved out of state. He rented the house that he moved out of, and then the tenants moved out and everything, and so the house is currently vacant, and he's got it up for sale, and he found out from his real estate agent that somebody on Craigslist was posting that they were going to rent the house out for $800. Not my nephew was going to rent out, but this other scammer that, you know, probably trolls the internet or something looking for these situations. Can you give any kind of advice of what to do in that situation or?
Oh, how interesting. Have you alerted the authorities about that? I mean, I wonder how far this guy would have gone. Would he have gone there and had keys made and actually taken a deposit from somebody who was going to rent the house? I mean, I don't know. I don't know the answer to those questions, and neither do you.
I don't know the answer to those questions myself, yeah.
It would seem to me that you'd want to report that to somebody. Now, you could report it to the police. You could certainly want to report it to Craigslist, but you want to find out who this person is. You know, I'm not sure I'd want to meet him,
right. No.
You know, because who knows who he is. But, boy, that's scary, and I've never heard of that one.
Okay.
I mean, I've heard of people leasing out places that they don't own, but I haven't heard that they're bold enough to advertise on Craigslist.
Oh, yeah. I've been hearing more stories about it.
Yeah.
I read a story today about somebody in South Carolina. She came home. There were two women living in her house. They had rented it. They had rented it through one of these sites. I don't know if it was Craigslist. It was a Facebook group, I think.
Wow.
And so the woman walked in, and there were two women in her house who thought they were on vacation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said to notify, let the neighbors on either side know about the situation and everything, too, because they can kind of, in a way, keep an eye out for strangers or anything, you know.
You know, that's a good point, because I'm trying to think, I'm trying to backthink this and say, how could someone prevent this from happening? First of all, I not many people would even think that would happen.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
But I suppose you're right, that what you need to do is just to reach out to neighbors and have neighbors be more vigilant. Because back in the day, back when I grew up in Berwyn, you know, people kind of watched out for each other. When I had a neighbor that used to go away for the whole summer, and everyone watched her house, and we mowed her lawn, and we got her mail. No one even thought about it. We just all did it. I pruned her roses for her, you know, and no one thought anything about it. But we don't live in a society like that anymore.
No.
Unfortunately, people come and go, and they mind their own business. But, Mike, thank you for the call.
Mike,
I think
thanks.
That alerts people to yet another peril in their life, right?
That's what we need, more peril, more panicking. Here's a text. This is an interesting question. I was at the beauty salon last week in Chicago. That's not the part. My car was stolen while in the care of valet parking. The attendant left the keys in the car unattended on the street. The salon says they have no responsibility, even though this is the parking company they have their clients use. The valet owner, who contracts with them, has asked me not to contact insurance. It was a fill-in employee not covered on the policy, plus leaving keys in the car is negligent, as insurance will drop them, and worried that he will lose his small business. I feel like I should talk to a lawyer before proceeding. Do you handle this kind of thing? What do you think Susie should do? This is from Susie.
Well, you know, you'd like to rectify the problem with the person whose fault it is, but simply, you're going to make a claim on your insurance. Isn't that what you should do? I mean, you have insurance for this. Now, if you tell me you don't have insurance and you only have liability, meaning if you hurt somebody, but let's just assume that you have insurance that covers the loss of the car. You make that report, and your insurance company will go after whomever.
So the insurance company will handle dealing with either the salon or the valet
because company. You have no rights directly against the person. If you, it's called subrogation, which means you made a contract with your insurance carrier that if something were to happen to your car, they would pay. Then they are subrogated, that you have a contract with them that allows them to go after the wrongdoer. You couldn't even legally bring a lawsuit against any of these people if your insurance company paid because you would have been made whole.
Right.
So certainly make the claim and let them take it from there.
Okay. And don't worry. Don't worry about the valet company saying, oh, I might lose, had some. Then you shouldn't have had a guy on there who that wasn't covered.
And don't wait. When you are, when you have a loss, whether it's on your car or your apartment or whatever it is, if you hesitate, the insurance company could have a right to deny coverage based upon failure to timely make a claim so they can investigate it.
Right.
So don't hesitate. Always just make the claim.
Okay. So Susie, take care of that now. We have somebody who has a couple divorce-related questions. So we have time maybe to... I can read them to you, and then you can, if they're longer, we can do them on the other side of the news.
Okay.
One, in a traditional divorce regarding an attorney's hourly fee, is it typical for her to charge for two separate categories of, quote, office hours and, quote, court hours? And the other question is there any way you can give a general estimate for how many office hours a divorce attorney might need to complete a no-fault, uncontested divorce?
Office hours and court hours, you can charge different rates. Some lawyers do. I don't. But it should be spelled out in the retainer agreement.
Okay.
You should always have a written agreement with your lawyer so you know exactly what you're paying by the hour and for what tasks. So that's the answer to the first question.
Okay.
The second one is it's impossible to give an estimate as to what a divorce will cost. People say, oh, this is no fault, or this is uncontested, there's not going to be any issues, famous last words. And then people start fighting about Tupperware and the garden hose.
Listen,
and everything else.
I like my Tupperware. Why do you have to bring
and
that
up? And the tops and the bottoms go together.
Of course
so,
they
you
do.
Know.
And you burp it, everything's fresh.
So it's hard. You know, if they quoted you a price, like a set price, then they should stick with that. But generally speaking, it's by the hour, and that encourages people to be reasonable, we hope.
Ah, okay. Now, which are more? And you said you charge the same, but in general, are court hours more than office hours?
Yes.
Okay, because you're doing all the hard work,
right,
theoretically, in the office.
Right, and you can't really do anything else when you're in court. You're
right.
Pretty much captive there.
Okay.
So, and some lawyers do that, you know, and it's perfectly acceptable, but you should set it forth in the agreement, and the client should understand that.
All right. Karen Conti's here. Do you have a question regarding something in the legal realm? 312-981-7200. We'll get to more of your questions and more legal issues on the other side of the news. But, very exciting. Starting Saturday, Karen, Pat Tomasulo of WGN Morning News gets his own comedy show. I don't know if you've heard about it.
No.
Well, they say Saturday nights in Chicago will never be the same. Man of the People premieres Saturday night at 10 on WGN-TV. It's 8:30 on WGN. This was a story I saw, and I sent it to you because in this day and age where everybody is watching everybody, everybody has surveillance cameras, and you know, the whole city is wired up and people are putting cameras on their house. I saw this and I wondered. Now, this is from Florida. this question, but I'm sure it translates well here. The question was, I live in a condo, and I have a neighbor whose front door directly faces mine. He has installed a video surveillance system on his door, and it records every time I open the door. I've asked him to take it down because it makes me extremely uncomfortable. He refused. I feel a loss of privacy. I feel violated. Is this legal?
Yeah, and unfortunately, it probably is. And I understand that would make someone feel very uncomfortable. But as long as there's no expectation of privacy, you can videotape whatever you want.
Really?
So, like, let's just say that that video somehow went into her bedroom, or when the door opened, you could then see inside in a way that invaded her privacy, and that she had an expectation that everything in there was going to be kept secret or private.
Okay.
Then she might have an action. But if it's really just on the outside, there really is no expectation of privacy. I have handled some of these cases, and what you see a lot of times in subdivisions where you have mm-hmm. rules, an association,
right.
A lot of times there are rules the association enacts that says you cannot use those for surveillance cameras. And I had one couple who had been broken in and had all kinds of stuff going on, things being taken, and they wanted to, you know, they thought that was their right to put a surveillance camera because they wanted to protect their children and their belongings. And the association said no, and they're entitled to do that if that's part of the rules.
Wow.
Yeah, so it kind of goes both ways. I understand that
And I was part, I hated it. I lived in a neighborhood that had an association.
Okay.
And I was like, what gives you people the right to tell me what to do?
I pay
exorbitant, at that point I was paying exorbitant taxes, and living in this house, which, you know, listen, this is my house. I should be able to do what I want. So I also understand not wanting to, you know, turn the neighborhood into an eyesore and things like that. But at what point can you outweigh the association? If my personal safety, if these people are getting broken into all the time, well, they should have a right to protect themselves.
The law is very strict about this. If you belong to an association has a right to make rules.
Okay.
You know, you voluntarily, you know, moved into that neighborhood. I had a case, this was a very interesting case out of California. It was in Rancho Santa Fe, which is a very swanky area.
Nice.
And it's association. Janet Jackson lives there. Dr. Scholl has a house up on a mountain there. I mean, we're talking about...
Does he walk up?
Very, very slowly and painfully. Those bunions will kill you.
That's
each
a
time.
Shame.
But, and anyway, I had a guy who came in there, and he planted 10,000 roses on his property. He was a plant grower.
Okay.
That was his deal. He put down everything. He put these beautiful plants, and they were all terraced. It was the most beautiful thing you ever saw. Well, as soon as he had them put in, the art jury, which was part of the association, said, we don't like this. It looks too manicured. We like the high chaparral look, which is sort of the tumbleweed kind of Southern California look. You have to take it down. He refused to take it down. We went to court. He got held in contempt, and the judge said, if you don't take it down within a certain number of days, you're going to jail.
Wow.
So here he has a house that was probably worth $5 or $6 million, and there was an art jury who could say one way or the other, I like your roses or I don't like your roses. So the answer is you can definitely bind people in your community. You can't do anything discriminatory,
okay.
Obviously,
sure.
Gender or race or any of those types of things. But you can say no fountains. You can say
no gazebos.
No gazebos.
That was a big thing on our associate.
No gazebos. Who doesn't want a gazebo?
I don't know. I wasn't building one, but there were people there, sheds. People did. There are a lot of people persnickety.
The idea is, you know, and you see this with colors of houses. You know,
mm-hmm.
you see this in some neighborhoods. You can't paint a certain color or whatever. And they're trying to preserve the value of the property. That's the goal.
Right.
And but they don't have to be super reasonable, in my view.
Okay.
Courts will uphold those association restrictions.
But to go back to your initial point, just to reiterate, if I have a camera, and as long as it's not peering into your house, like if I post one on my backyard, let's say, out my back door, and it's just looking out and it catches the neighbor's backyard and their garage and stuff, that's okay.
That's okay.
But if it was turned so that when the blinds were open, it also could see in their inside their physical house.
Not okay.
Not okay.
And you can't have it audio taping because that would be against the wiretap laws if there was no consent. So
really?
It can only be a videotape.
Okay. Oh, the wiretap. I always forget. So is that why we see all these surveillance? There's never audio.
There's never audio.
What's the difference? Can you explain that? If I own a convenience store and I'm videotaping for security reasons, Why can't I hear that guy who pulled the gun tell me, say whatever he's going to say to my clerk as he's trying to rob my store?
You know what, Brian? My guess is that someday those wiretap laws are going to be gone and that we're not going to have an expectation of privacy when it comes to oral statements. You know, I think it makes people feel very uncomfortable. But, you know, we've sort of gotten used to, I think I read in the article you sent me that we are videotaped like 75 times a day, the average person in
the
city.
I don't want to think about that.
I can't believe that's true. But if it is, even if it's 30, that's an amazing amount of videotape.
And most of the time we don't even know it.
It's, exactly. You know. And we've kind of come to the idea, we don't think about it until we know about it, right?
Right.
So, but, you know, I think, my guess is that in a few years we're going to have those laws become very loose and that we're going to have no expectation of privacy even in the things we say.
Well, and see, I don't, again, it's that double-edged sword. I don't mind, if I'm in a grocery store or a convenience store where I don't expect it to be private because I'm out in public. If you can listen in my house, that's a problem.
That's a different thing.
That's a
right.
problem. But if I'm out, I'm in public. And if I'm yelling at you, if you're, you know, you're working at the store and I'm yelling at you to give me all your money, or I'm going to kill you, blah, blah, blah. Well, so what? So they can see me point the gun, but they can't hear me threaten you? I don't get it.
Right.
I don't understand the difference.
No, and it seems to me they're both invasive, but the videotape is even more invasive.
Yeah, you see everything.
In some ways.
All right, a text from the 847. Our dog groomer accidentally got shampoo in our dog's eyes. Now, I've read that first sentence, and I was like, uh-oh, this is not serious. But our dog has an allergy and is just sensitive in general. We wound up at an animal eye care vet in addition to other vets where we found out that the dog had an ulcer on his eye from the shampoo. Our bills totaled close to $700. Is the groomer liable for any of this?
Interesting. The first thing you would do is look at whatever you signed with the groomer. If you signed anything, there might be a limitation of liability.
Okay.
So the next question would be, was the groomer negligent by allowing the dog, the shampoo to get in the dog's eye? And, you know, it seems to me, just trying, if I had the gavel here, now if I were the lawyer, I could argue both ways on this. But if I was
Karen's
sitting
with
Karen's court, I would say that they probably aren't. And here's why. It's kind of expected that when you shampoo an animal that you might get suds in their eye, right?
Sure.
And dogs are moving around and, you know, they're not necessarily staying still. So that, and how would that person have known that this shampoo would cause an ulcer to the eye and result in this kind of damage?
Right.
Was this dog particularly sensitive to it? Now, I would change my mind if the shampoo, for some reason, were, like, too toxic.
Yeah.
Maybe it was a really harsh shampoo that they shouldn't have been using.
Right.
But you'd have to prove that. The bottom line is, for $700 of damage, you're not going to bring a lawsuit.
Okay.
But if you felt strongly enough about it, you could go back to the groomer and say, listen, this is what happened. This is directly caused by what happened here. I would like compensation for it. Let's see what they do.
Yeah. All right.
Maybe they have some insurance for that would pay it.
Could be.
Yeah.
Because as you've mentioned many times, there's and it's always hard for people to hear, there's a dollar amount.
Yeah.
It's is it worth it? And what you're going to spend versus what you could possibly win in a settlement, and that's not...
And your time is worth something,
right.
too. I know my time is worth something because I get paid for it, right?
Exactly.
But a lot of people feel like, oh, I'll file a small claim, and I'll go to... But then you take off 4 days or 5 days of work. You know, you lost your vacation. You know,
right.
Who wants to do that for $700?
No.
I wouldn't want to do it.
Me either. From the 630, I'm 65 and a half and looking for a new job. I know I don't have to tell my age in an interview. However, hypothetically, if I got offered a job, then have the health insurance conversation, and I say I'm on Medicare, now they know my age. Can they rescind a job offer when they learn my age?
No.
Okay.
Age discrimination.
So once you've been offered a job, they can't say, oh, wow, you're older than we thought.
Well, they can't discriminate against you in hiring you.
Okay.
So if, let's just say they were stupid enough to say, I'm sorry, we don't hire people over the age of 42. Okay, that's clear age discrimination.
Right.
And if they realize he's 65, he's very youthful and he looks like he's 42, he's like the George Hamilton of whatever, you know, and now they find out he's 65 and they fire him. That's also illegal. Now, as a practical matter, do people discriminate based on age? All the time. Do they ever tell you they're doing it? No.
Never.
They're going to say, oh, he's not qualified. He doesn't have computer skills. He doesn't have the job resume that we wanted. So Those are the kind of things you run up against. It's hard to get a job when you're older. It really is.
It's 65 and a half. That's to make a change has got to be very tough.
It is hard.
So, well, good luck.
Yes, good luck.
312-981-7200. That's Karen Conti. She's here answering legal questions as she does every Sunday night. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800. But the best way is to email me, because then I can get back to you very quickly and can give you some written directions, whether it's a referral or some quick advice. And that is WGN@AskKarenConti.com.
WGN@AskKarenConti.com. You can ask Karen Conti right now, 312-981-7200. More with Karen and with you on the other side. It's WGN. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about this 20-year-old who won the lottery. Now, I know you don't do estate planning and stuff or finance, but from a legal point of view, all of a sudden I come into $200 and some million. As if you were my attorney, what would you tell me? Other than, hey, my hourly rate just went up.
Wow. You know, that's a loaded question. And there are lawyers who do this kind of advice. I mean, clearly you're going to want to put together a really rock-solid estate plan. There's probably also some options that the person would have to make. They give you different options about how you take the money. You can take it in payments. You can take it in a reduced lump sum. And those have to be explained to you so you understand what that means. And again, you want to probably have maybe an accountant involved and maybe a lawyer involved, because you want to know, what kind of person is this? Is this a person who's going to spend all their money? I would be very concerned that a 20-year-old could blow through that money, or that a family member or a friend could take advantage and say, oh, I think I need a little bit of money for something. Can you loan me for this great adventure? And then the person's, you know, so maybe that's money is put aside in a way that makes sense for the client. But, you know, if the client doesn't want to do that, he doesn't have to do that.
Well, I did read that he set up an LLC 10 days before. For people who are coming into big, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars, which is, you know, we're all going to win the lottery someday. Is that a wise move?
Yeah.
And for people who aren't clear on that, what is an LLC?
Well, LLC is a limited liability corporation, and it's like a corporation, and the goal of it is to insulate yourself from lawsuits and liability, okay? But that's usually when you're operating a business.
Okay.
So you can't insulate yourself personally from things in an LLC unless there's something I'm missing here.
Yeah.
Like, meaning, let's just say I have an LLC in my business. It's called Conti Law LLC.
Okay.
But let's just say I were to go out and run someone over when I left here. Well, that wouldn't, my LLC wouldn't insulate me from liability, because I personally did that. If I were acting on behalf of my company and I did something wrong, let's say I blew a statute of limitations and I caused the client damage, then that company would insulate me from damage.
Okay.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So the LLC probably is not a bad idea, and it's cheap to do and it's easy, but it's not going to completely isolate him from a problem.
Okay, yeah, they said the money was given to the LLC, not so the check was, the big giant check was written to the LLC, not to him personally.
Interesting. So he's going to operate that money as if it were a business, and maybe it's a good idea.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Brian from Montana texting in, my parents have two houses, timeshares, stocks, and bonds. They told me it's mine in the will. Am I safe? So what is he? How do you call your parents on that and go, hey, can I see it? Are you sure you have a will? You can't. That's very indelicate.
Tell me again what he has.
His parents have two houses.
Yeah.
Timeshares, stocks, and bonds.
Timeshares, stocks, and bonds. Okay. And so he wants to know
if it's in the will, is everything cool? As long as it's in the will, is he safe, or do they need to set up more fences or protection?
Here's the problem. As a beneficiary, you really can't force the issue. You can't say, Mom, I want to see the will, number one. Let's just say that they give it to you. And let's just say you look at it and you get a lawyer who says, you know what, that's a terrible will. It doesn't really secure your rights. You are really dabbling in the idea of undue influence.
Okay.
This is what we've talked about.
Yes.
And this is that strange problem that you have when you try to help your parents do what they want to do. You pick a lawyer, you take them to the lawyer, you sit in the lawyer's office with them, they change their will accordingly, and later you get hit with a lawsuit for undue influence and they try to undo the will, which can happen.
Oh.
Because you've made yourself a part of the process, and as a beneficiary, you can't do that. So it's really unfortunate. So, yeah, I mean, could he say, can I see the will? He sure he can do that. Will he be able to tell if it's solid and enforceable? He could hire a lawyer.
That may be what it is. Do my parents have to set up any kind of anything else, any other safeguards to make sure that this stuff goes to him, or is a will enough?
Well, and again, he's not going to be able to do that unless he gets it in his hand and brings it to a separate lawyer. I mean,
all right. So even him saying to his parents, "Hey, make sure you get a trust, or make sure you do this," or does that? Are you still getting close to that line of undue influence?
You might be. I mean, I'd like to know if a lawyer set up this estate plan. If a lawyer set up this estate plan, then don't we assume that it's probably good?
Right,
I mean,
exactly.
That they picked a decent
you
person.
Hope so.
And it sounds like they've got some assets, a couple houses, some stocks and bonds, so these people are not living the poverty line, so you would think they would have chosen a good lawyer. So I don't know that he has a right to do that, personally or legally.
Right. All right. Well, Brian, just assume you're safe.
I understand. He's saying my parents tell me I have it, but what happens if they die and I don't have it?
Right.
And then maybe he's not even being selfish about it.
He just
wants to make sure his parents' wishes are going to be honored.
I think that's where it is. It's like, is this going to be enough?
Yes.
Is there anything else that I need to worry about?
If he went through like one of those computer programs, if the parents did, maybe not. Maybe that's when you say to the parents, you should go get a lawyer.
Yeah, because if they just did it online.
Yeah, I just don't trust those things.
Listen, it's all the rage.
I know.
We can do all listen, just like I saved hundreds of thousands of dollars by not going to medical school, I could save hundreds of thousands of dollars and not go to law school and just go on the internet and just put an X here and X there. Suddenly I have all my legal documents. Why talk to a professional? The internet has all the answers.
They know
everything about everything.
You know, I like clients who know what they need and what they want,
right.
But sometimes they come to me and they'll say something and I'll be like, that's Nevada law. No, that's Nevada law. You looked up, you found something that makes sense, but it's not our state.
Yeah.
So
Brian texted back. That is what he meant. A lawyer set it up. He just wanted to know if his parents needed to do more planning or if a will set up by a lawyer would cover it.
I'm hoping there was a trust. And again, I don't know the law in Montana, but a will goes through probate, which means you have to go to court and it's expensive. So I'm hoping there was a trust involved,
not just a will.
You know, and maybe he should find that out. Does this go through probate? Probate means you have to file it in court. You have to go to court before the money gets distributed. A judge has to rule on it. The whole purpose of having a trust in the estate plan is usually to avoid that process.
Ah, okay. All right, very good. What are any big legal story issues coming up? We got any of the new laws that you see that have kicked in over the last couple of weeks problematic? Anything you think is going to change drastically?
No, I'm thinking of small, stupid things. In particular, you had an article last week about the law changing when it comes to dogs
and
a divorce.
Yes, that they're going to be treated more like children, and it's going to be who's in the. Who will get the pet based on the pet's best interests, which I find, you know, judges have a hard enough time figuring out who a kid is going to, you know, the best interest
of
a child, and the dog can't testify.
Right.
My dog talks nonstop, but I don't understand it, so she
You know, a lot of people laugh
nothing.
At these things, but these become issues in a divorce, and I've litigated them, and I wrote an article that was called When the Marriage Goes to the Dogs, Where Do the Dogs Go? And, you know, generally the judge looks and says, was this a gift? You know, if the husband came home one day and said, hey, here for your birthday is a little puppy. Well, that'll be a gift, just as an engagement ring or a set of golf clubs or something like that. So then it goes to the person who was the recipient of the gift. Who spends most time with the dog? Who takes the dog out for a walk? Who sleeps in the bed with the dog? You know, when someone leaves the marital residence and moves out, does he take the dog or does the dog stay with the other person? You know, all those things are going to be considered. And, you know, who stays in the house? Maybe the house is the best place for the dog because the dog has a yard to run around in. And maybe someone moved out to an apartment that doesn't allow dogs. So we look at all those things.
So it is a big deal. And if you don't have pets, you might not think that it's a big deal. But if you do have a pet, you can understand.
I have a case now where the dog goes with the kids. So the parents have 50-50 parenting time.
Okay.
And so for 2 days, the kids are with dad, 2 days, the kids are with mom, and then they rotate like the Friday weekend. And the dog, which, everyone loves this dog.
Yeah.
This is like the most attended to dog in the world. Goes, you know, when the dad drops the kids off after the school, the dog goes with the mom. Wow. And then it goes back and forth. So this dog, and then they have rules about who pays for things and who gets the checkups.
And that was all in the
agreement. Yeah, they did it by agreement at first, and that will be going into the ultimate document that we enter in court.
Well, see, because that it can run up. Having a pet is expensive,
yes.
Especially when that animal, regular maintenance is expensive, and then if, God forbid, your animal gets sick, it costs a lot of money, so you do
yep.
need to know what's going on. Somebody, this is an interesting question, not quite generally a legal question, but kind of. Do lawyers learn the entire scope of the law and then specialize, kind of like doctors who kind of learn everything and then decide they're going to be a podiatrist?
Great question.
Yes. So do you learn all the law?
No. Yeah. Well, in law school, we learn to think. We don't really learn the law. We don't sit there and memorize statutes. When we study for the bar, yes, we do kind of know the law. We have to learn the various rules of procedure and those types of things. But there is no such thing as a specialty in law. In fact, we can't use the word, I specialize in X. That's unethical to actually say that.
Okay.
We can say, I concentrate my practice in family law, or I concentrate in criminal law, but we don't specialize. The only specialty is patent.
Okay.
And that's a special bar that you have to take. You have to, you know, be an engineer and do all that stuff. So interestingly, the answer to your question is no. You go to law school, you get a general degree, I can come out and I can practice in any area I want.
Okay.
I can practice in 10 areas if I want. And that's kind of scary for the average consumer.
Yes, exactly.
Because, you know, I don't want to handle anything that I don't know how to handle.
Right.
But some lawyers go out there and handle stuff they don't know how to handle. So that's why you're always going to be asking questions like, how many of these cases have you handled and what is your, you know, that type of thing.
Very nice. Well, very good answer. All right. How do people get a hold of you during the week?
You can call me at 312-332-7800 or WGN at AskKarenConti.com.
All right. And you'll be on with Steve Cochran Wednesday morning at 6:40.
That's right.
And I will see you next week, maybe a little earlier. Who knows?
A surprise.
Yeah, there might be a surprise.
There might be a surprise next week.
But either way, we will see you next week.
Well, that's right.
All right. Fantastic. All right. Let's do this. Then it's time to go. All right. Thanks for listening and being part of the program. I will talk to you again next Sunday. And thank you, Cody. Thank you, Roger. Rick Kogan comes your way on the other side of the news. This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com. If you're an Amazon Echo user, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. It is 9 o'clock. Roger Badish.